you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got soul. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. I just got done running 2 miles. Okay? A mile. Okay, I went around a block. Welcome to the show, everybody. Good morning. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. We are global. A long time since we're on. Let's get right to it. Title of the show, Enough. Well, apparently there's an A-talking whistleblower who's giving us a little bit more detail of what was happening with Donald Trump during the Capitol riots. And like Donald Trump did, he responded by calling her a whore. That's W-H-O-R-E, or in the rapper sense world, ho. We're going to talk about that. Her book is called Enough. Her name is Cassidy Hutchinson. It's a book about Donald Trump. That's what it's about. Cassidy Hutchinson, her death was a mere step from the most controversial president in recent American history. Four times indicted, 2 times impeached. A judge called him a rapist. Yeah, you're president. Now she provides a riveting account of her extraordinary experiences as an idealistic young woman thrust in the middle of a national crisis, where she has risked everything to tell the truth about some of the most powerful people in Washington. We're going to listen to an excerpt of her book, get involved a little bit about Cassidy, and we'll talk about the rapist, Donald Trump. Rapist with an R. You know, I got to give Donald Trump credit. He could brand anything. Even brand rapist is not that bad. So all you rapists out there, Donald Trump says she's not her type, his type. So there you go. That's your defense. There's a president of the United States, Donald Trump. You know, I still laugh at the songs that these little girls wrote for Donald Trump. It still cracks me up. It's been a long time since I played it. I don't even know if I even have it anymore. But it's worth a listen. But I don't know if I even have it. But when I do find it, I will play it because it's really funny. Here it is. Here's the song I found it. This is a song about Donald Trump. Listen to the lyrics of these little girls. I mean, it sounds like they're singing a World War II song. You know, think about World War II. These are little girls who just did this about 2 years ago. They tried to sue Donald Trump because he wouldn't pay them. Well, forget about that because Trump doesn't pay his bills. But I want you to listen to it and listen to the words. Doesn't it sound like a World War II song? Here we go. Here you go. From the Kiddies.
Strength or get crushed every time. USA,
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 where the land of the free and the home of the brave. USA,
USA,
the stars and stripes are flying, let's celebrate our freedom, inspire proudly freedom to the world. Ameritude,
USA,
American pride,
USA,
it's attitude, it's who we are, stand up tall. Our colors don't run no serene. Over here,
USA.
Over there,
USA.
Freedom and liberty everywhere.
USA.
Okay, can you see it's not so easy, but we have to stand up tall and answer freedom's call.
Go get him, boys. Go get him. You know, I'm a big fan of Hamilton. I love Hamilton. If you haven't seen Hamilton, and you're Canadian, I see her right in the room. Good morning, my Canadian beauty. Her name is Pat Oberlin. She's in the room. Just a minute, Pat. I'm going to open up your mic. I'm a big fan of Hamilton. And if you are in Canada, Paris, I got some people in Germany, blah, blah, blah. If you want to know about American history, go to YouTube and listen to the Hamilton. It is great. Now, Hamilton came out, I think, 3 years ago, maybe four, I'm not quite sure. But there's a song in Hamilton about King George saying that, you know, the USA won the war with Washington. And King George says, I'll be back. You're going to miss me. As much as he was a tyrant and everything to the Americans and slavery and stuff, he said, I'll be back. You're going to miss me. Who knew? Who knew that there was another song with Donald Trump about he'll be back? Listen to this.
You say, I don't have a vote and I won't, so I must go away. You cry. You lose, there's no fraud, that's fake news, and I won't say goodbye. I'm so sad. Remember when I had a lead that they couldn't surmount? Now you're making me mad. Magically it disappeared, now I want a recount. I'll be back, soon you'll see. Coney Barrett, she belongs to me. I'll be back, time will tell. Pennsylvania can go straight to hell. I will rise, Joe will fall. All lives matter, but mine most of all. And if you claim I'm done, I will send another China virus to convince you that I won. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. the president. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 everybody. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. You know, you listen to those words, and they're true. He was just a judge just convicted him of fraud. Call him a fraud. Yesterday, also sanctioned Trump's lawyers. They could lose their license. The judge said he had never seen such fraud in his life. Yeah. And Trump lashed out at the judge, and I'm going to hear, I went to Truth Social and tell you what Trump said. After he called, what's her name, a whore. And then he threatened to our general to execute him. Yeah, that's your guy. I'm going to open up the mic. This is a world-famous psychic. You might know her as Pat Oberlin. I know her as the truth-sayer. She can read your future. She can read what's happening to you. She can tell if you can get an erection or not. She's better than one of those tablets, Viagra. Our show is sponsored by Patty's Bakery, home of patty cakes, the world-famous patty cakes. Devil Food's Cake is the bestseller, along with her gummies, mushrooms, as she calls them, shroonies. Yeah, for Halloween. Halloween, shroonies for the Goonies. That's it on Pat on Halloween. Ladies and gentlemen, Pat Oberlin, there she is. Hello, Pat.
Hey.
Hey.
We were just talking about shrooms the other day.
I know. Wow.
My nieces decided to come and be the straight person the day we do them because I haven't done them in quite a few years. So.
Wow.
We might
need somebody
to order the food.
Yeah, you're going to need a designated shroom person just by your side if you haven't done it. Wow. Pat's a psychic.
We've done it. We just...
Yeah. I was just telling who you are. You're a psychic, but go ahead.
Have any of your readings come true, honey?
Mine has. I told you, you're spot on. Yeah, I've had many psychics on the show. I got to start putting psychics in the title so we get more people coming in who want a reading. Put us in the psychic area, get some of the psychics. I've had psychics on the show, but Pat's been spot on. Well, one time she was off I was leaving my girlfriend. She was off there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she didn't actually say that. She said that she's not good for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can stay with somebody you're not good with.
Oh, my God. That is true. That is absolutely
true. I did
that
for a while.
I did that a couple of times, trust me. Wow. Until it got really deadly. Well, I haven't been on the air for a while. And Pat, we're going to talk. We got a lot of things to talk about. I told you our main story. We're going to talk about Cassidy and It's Enough. Before we get there, we have this thing in America called smash and grab. These are a group of people.
Yeah,
and they're usually. Do you have them in Canada? It's going on. It's a group of people
who
go in this store.
No.
Well, here's what caused it, and a lot of people don't know what caused this. We have a thing in the United States. Well, in California. I can only speak for California. I don't know about the rest of the states. California. Well, it used to be you could steal up to $500 worth of stuff, and it would be considered a misdemeanor, a ticket. a ticket. Now, since the pandemic, they raised it. I think they raised it to $1,500. I'm not sure. I'm thinking it's $5,000, but I'm going to go $1,500 to be safe. And I'll get the stats on it. Well, they raised the amount. Let's say $1,500. So what it says is that you can steal up to $1,500, and it's a misdemeanor. It's a ticket.
Well, holy handy. For all the homeless, that'd be great. Get a tent, get sleeping bags, you know.
No kidding, right? Right? You can get a tent for $800,
like,
and you just get a ticket. Well, if you get
goodness.
A ticket, you can... You get a ticket, you go to jail, but then that's housing. You know, homeless people want to go to jail. It's housing. I know. So
yeah,
therefore,
then they don't have the drugs, Brian.
Yeah, they. Well, you believe
Mind
me.
Mind you, there's drugs in jail. I know that.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit.
I know
some
that.
Hooch too. Yeah, there's some hooch that you can get in there. Some good old whiskey, right from the toilet. But
where
true.
The hell do they brew it in the toilet?
They do. They put a little baggie in there, put it in the toilet, let it simmer, baby. Let it simmer. Let me see. I don't even know how to get the, you can, because that, you can, let me see if I can do this because it's true. I know people are listening to me going, that's not true. It is true. You can still up to what amount, one amount, and it's still a misdemeanor. I'm doing it with one hand.
You're just doing
okay.
California, aren't you?
I don't know what will come up. Okay, here it is. No, you can't steal up to $950 worth of merchandise in California without consequences under Proposition 47. The proposition reduces the punishment for certain theft crimes. They reduce the punishment for certain theft crimes, but it still classifies shoplifting as a misdemeanor. So I was wrong. It's $950. So you could steal up to $950 from a store anywhere, $950. You can steal a TV for $700-something and consider it a misdemeanor, a ticket. It says, thanks to Proposition 47, shoplifting offenses involving property valued at less than $950 are prosecuted as a misdemeanor, not felonies. It used to be a felony, but now they put it as a misdemeanor. Such offenses are punishable up to 6 months in county jail. It's a misdemeanor. It says, can a misdemeanor theft go to jail? And it says, no. The California theft law only established that a misdemeanor theft is one of a value of $950 or less. Misdemeanor charges can still lead to no more than 6 months in jail. It's not a felony. So this is why they're doing it. And kids are doing it. It's a ticket.
Wow.
It's a ticket.
Wow.
So you can go into any place and steal up to $950 worth of merchandise in California. It's a misdemeanor. Gets off, you know, it's just a misdemeanor. It won't even be on your record. It's a ticket. So you wonder why these kids are raiding these places. They're not wearing masks or anything. They're just going in, smashing, grab, and running out. Well, less than $900. Okay. And the cops are saying, it's a ticket. It's a misdemeanor. What are we doing? Case
That's
in point,
crazy.
According to exactly. Case in point, according to CNBC. We have a store called Target. Do you have a Target in Canada?
Yeah, I think we do.
Okay. Well, according to Target is a main store over here. Target is. It's a discounted store where you can buy everything, like a Walmart. Well, the only thing I can disguise is it's just a Walmart. Well, according to, and I lost it, believe it or not. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Well, let's go this. Thieves can sell, this is the other people who are doing a smash and grab. Thieves can sell expensive items at flash prices, meaning there's no shortage of buyers. The result is a ruthless cycle that affects everyone. Some affected stores will shut down and relocate in case, and that's what's happening. That's Target. Target says they're tired of this shit. They are sick and tired of this bull. Yeah, they're tired of this bullshit. Target says it will close.
If that was well known, Brian, like you're doing right now, they're going to have a bigger problem.
They may. They're going to lose a lot of money. But Target says it will close 9 stores in major cities. And they're saying that they're citing violence and theft. 9 stores. And you know the stores are going to close. I don't have to read the article. It's going to be low-income housing-level stores. You know what I mean? Target, and I said that before I read the article. Target, which has nearly 2,000 stores in the U.S., has been outspoken about organized retail crime and its stores and said that theft has driven higher levels of a shrink. Target is closing locations in New York City, Seattle, San Francisco, and Portland. Those are big cities. You know, Target, they said Tuesday it will close 9 stores in the major cities across the country. The company will close stores in New York City, Harlem. Yep, there we go. I'm telling you, in Harlem neighborhoods. 2 locations in Seattle, these stores in San Francisco, Oakland area, 3 more in Portland, Oregon. The discounter said it will shutter the stores for good on October 21st. A spokesperson from Target says, "We cannot continue operating these stores because theft and organized retail crime are threatening the safety of our team and our guests and contributing to for the business." The word is unsustainable business, right?
Unsustainable business.
It's really you know what? A friend of mine gave me some weed last night. I'm still tripping. It's going to be some weird-ass weed because I'm still feeling the effects. I can't even say unsustainable. But I just said it. Can't say it. We know that our stores serve an important role in their communities. As the Target spokesperson said, "We can only be successful if the working and shopping environment is safe for all." Target, which has nearly 2,000 stores, they described the losses from goods that were damaged, misplaced, or stolen. With this announcement Tuesday, Target also stands apart in its decision to both shutter stores, that means close down, and they blame it on crime. This is it. This is what you get. You get what you get. They added that overall it's expected to reduce Target's full year profitability by more than $500
million.
$500 million they're losing. So somebody's going to get killed. I'm telling you, this can't go on. There has to be a beginning, middle, and end. And you know what's going to be is some poor mother crying on the news that her 9-year-old son was shot in the head because he was following his big brother looting a store. I'm telling you this right now. I'm telling you this. I foresee this. That somebody's going to be shot in the head or get a hatchet. And it's going to be a kid, maybe 9, 10, following their big brother or their sister, doing this kind of bullshit, and it's going to make the news, and they're going to be crying like a little crying bitch. And you know what I'm going to say? Serve his ass right. I have no sympathy for this bullshit. Go ahead, Pat. What do you feel on it?
I'm really glad I live here. We don't have this stuff.
Yeah. Welcome to the USA.
We just don't have this shit going on.
I know, right? So that, you know, I feel sorry for these store owners and everything, and they see this. I mean, when you see it, they go into 7-Elevens, they go everywhere. It has to be organized on the internet. I know it has to be on the internet, so they get the group of people together. It has to be some kind of network, because you just can't spontaneous go in the store and then hundreds of people go in the store right after you and loot. They have to have some kind of communication with each other, get themselves together, and call it a loot party. And they do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's just so many of them. We're talking about 50, 25 people, 15 people rushing the store at one time, just smashing, grabbing, and just running out the store. I'm telling you, if I was a store owner, I would have some buckshot, man. Somebody's going to pay. I'm shooting them with some salt. Spraying their eyes with bear spray, they're going to pay. I get to buy some watchdogs and some asses is going to be bit.
Oh, no.
I'm going to get some crying-ass woman saying, why did the cops or why did that store owner shoot my son in the head and want justice? It's going to happen. I guarantee it. It's going to happen. That's one of the stories.
Extreme. It's extreme, Brian.
Pat, did you ever think about coming to the USA as a vacation or anything like that?
I used to. I would not do it anymore.
Did this show have anything to do with it?
No. Nope. No, Brian, I'm old, okay? I'm really old. And
I
traveled a lot. I've been in all but four states. I've been around everywhere. I have, like, a photographic memory for texture and smell and everything else. So it's like I don't need to go back. I've been there. But, no, it's the whole attitude in the States is different than Canada. I don't like it. I don't feel safe there.
Yeah.
You know, like, there are some pretty major things going on there that we just don't experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it is fearful to you know, to go to the United States. It is fearful, and we're going to cover some of these stories. And we have. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Well, you know, it's like I grew up without the cameras, without the violence, without the. You know, all that stuff didn't happen. It just didn't happen. This is like a nightmare to somebody that grew up in the 60s.
Yeah.
And the 70s. You know, like, what the hell? It's 1984 all the way.
I know.
And the violence is just... I can't tell you how... difficult I find the violence in your country.
Yeah, I can tell you, and it's bad. I don't know why anybody would want to visit the United States if you're like in Paris or whatever. I mean, every country has their problems and sections and stuff, but this seems rapid through, you know, across the board here, you know.
Yeah, it does.
Wow. And,
like, I don't know, I just find the mindset is different. The mindset in the States is almost to the point of kill or be killed.
Yeah, well, and California's a wild, wild west.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how I function in that. Like, I have to say, I was in some pretty bad situations when I was young because of the people I was around. But I can't say I'd want to experience that on a day-to-day basis at this point in my life. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Well, when we have a president who's a rapist, who calls a person who speaks out a whore, who vows, who says that your chief of staff should be executed, or your general should be executed, Milley should be executed.
That's crazy.
This is a person running for president of the United States.
That's insanity.
Yeah. And it sure is. I mean.
And you know, like, why is it you can buy a gun down there, but you can't buy a switchblade to defend yourself?
Because it's concealed. You could display the gun. See, the gun cannot be. We have a state, and King is from there, Arizona. We were visiting Arizona at one time, and it's not uncommon that you see them walking around with guns down by their waist or in their truck. As long as you display you have a gun, you're cool. But once you hide it, that's when there's problems.
Well, gee whiz. I've had several occasions where knives came in very handy.
Oh, yeah. Nothing better than a knife.
It stopped things. It stopped things.
It sure does.
It exasperated by shooting somebody. You know, there's a limit to what they can do to you.
I know. Well, here's the headline. It's what I'm. You get the idea of the temperature in the USA. Here's Trump. This is according to the Independent. Now, Mark Milley was it his chief of staff? He was a general. He's one of our major generals. He was joint chief, and he's one of our heroes, our generals in our army. He went against Trump, and so here's the headline. Trump suggests Mark Milley should be executed in possible breach of pretrial release conditions. So Trump called for his execution. Donald Trump made a series of aggressive comments on social media about outgoing head of Joint Chief Mark Milley, suggesting the top military leader conduct was worthy of execution. What president talks about executing? Executing your general? That's a banana republic right there.
You know who does that? Putin. He throws out windows and poisons them.
Putin loves that shit. That's his hobby. It says here, Mark Milley, who led perhaps the most embarrassing moment in American history with his grossly incompetent implementation of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, costing many lives, leaving behind hundreds of American citizens, and handling over billions of dollars of the finest military equipment ever made, will be leaving the military next week. That's what Trump said on Friday. This will be a time for all citizens of the USA to celebrate, he continued. This is Donald Trump. This guy turned out to be a woke train wreck who, if the fake news reporting is correct, was actually dealing with China to give them a heads up on thinking of the President of the United States. Trump, wasn't your daughter dealing with China and they kicked her out? Didn't she have a clothing store in China? Wasn't she dealing in China? And who knows what secrets your daughter told the Chinese government since she's a political figure? You know, they talk about Biden being kind of crazy, being dementia. Trump, I think, is a sociopath. Not only that he's demented, but he's a sociopath. So, I mean, he's talking about, which is not true what Trump said, but even if it was true, didn't your daughter deal with China at one time? And so Trump says, this act is egregious. And I doubt if Trump said it because he doesn't know how to spell egregious, and I don't even know how to pronounce it, and Trump doesn't either.
He just did it.
Well, I think the weed is still kicking in, giving me a headache. The letters are dancing in their cartoon form. It's like, catch me. So Trump says, by punishment would have been death. He wants to execute him. The former president's comments could potentially run afoul on his release conditions ahead of trials related to a special counsel investigation. Blah, blah, blah. If Mr. Wiley, in fact, a witness in either of the case, which he would be, Trump could face serious penalties. My bet, Donald Trump is threatening General Miley because General Miley is on the government's witness list for the trial in Mar-a-Lago documents. So Trump sees that list. Trump's attacks on Mr. Miley come after the military official was featured in a death profile in the Atlantic, where the general described Trump's disturbing alleged lack of respect for the armed forces. He described how a 2019 event, Trump reportedly expressed disgust that Lewis, oh, you should hear this one. So Trump is pissed off, right? He's not only pissed off, he's disgusted. It was an Army veteran. The guy was named Luis Avila. He was an Army veteran, okay? He served 5 combat tours and lost his leg in an IED attack. He was chosen to sing God Bless America. This is Luis. Well, what did Trump do? Trump got pissed off at this guy. He goes, why do you bring people like that here? No one wants to see that. The wounded. Trump says, no more wounded. Nobody wants to see wounded. Why are you bringing people like that around me? This guy got wounded in his country. But Trump doesn't want to see that. It's disgusting, he said. Why would you bring people around like that?
There's too many similarities between Trump and Putin, if you ask me.
This is the character of this dotard, this rapist, the functional sociopath. And then the Navy SEALs, which is sacred, right? They go in, they defend our country. So Trump was reportedly praised the Navy SEALs, Eddie Gallagher, who previously was found guilty of posting the dead body of an ISIS prisoner, who he stabbed in the neck as a hero, claiming soldiers are just killers. So Trump loved that.
Well,
makes these comments. And that's who this guy is. This is who he is. I gave you a little tease on this guy's character. And we're going to get into more about how did we get here, how did Trump arrive, who is this motherfucker. We're going to get into that. And that's what Cassidy Hutchinson is about, her new book. And, I'll give you a little tease. I hit the wrong thing. Yes, I did. I did it.
So what did you hit?
Once I go over some shit, I will exit out so I know where I am, so I don't repeat it. But here's a little excerpt on her book, which is Enough Enough, and we're going to get more into detail on that a little later. But here's what she has to say about Donald Trump. Listen to her words.
Larson, Winona Lucido, Beth Maglione, Dominic Montalto, Nicole Moran, Amanda Mulholland, Meryl Proposi, Jamie Selzer, Emma Shaw, Elisa Shokoff, Tom Spain, Mabel Tavares, and Christina Zarafanidis.
Okay, so she did the intro. And her book, Cassidy Hutchinson's death was mere steps from the most controversial president in recent American history. Now she provides a riveting account of her extraordinary experience as an idealistic young woman thrust in the middle of a national crisis where she risked everything to tell the truth about some of the most powerful people in Washington. Here we go.
In the fabric of our nation's history, there is a body of guardians who protect the sanctity of our republic. I extend heartfelt gratitude to the United States Capitol Police. Your courageous defense of the Capitol and the democratic principles it represents is an enduring reminder of the sacrifices made by those who preserve the ideals of freedom and justice. Thank you to the members of Congress and staff who served on the January 6th committee. These individuals shone light on the perils our nation faced that day. Their commitment to the task at hand, regardless of political affiliation, exemplifies the strength of our institutions. A special thank you to Kristen Amerling, Dan George, Tim Hapefee, Joe Marr, John Wood, and Hannah Moldaven for your professionalism and intellect. Alyssa Farah Griffin is a true American patriot who I am fortunate to call my dear friend. When courage was scarce, Alyssa chose to speak out, a testament to her fidelity to our nation. I cannot overstate the impact that Alexander Butterfield has had on my life. His allegiance to the oath he swore is a reminder that the pursuit of justice is an obligation that should never waver. May his legacy continue inspiring future generations to find their moral compass in the face of adversity. This journey would not have been possible without the generosity of Alston and Byrd. Beyond their legal expertise, the entire law firm became a source of encouragement and support, a reminder that no one should face the challenges of life alone. Richard Hayes, Mary Benton, Stephen Simrell, Alicia Badley, Mary Fertitta, Dale Foster, and Alex Wolf. Thank you for renewing my sense of resilience and transforming my perspective on the power of community. Bill Jordan and Jody Hunt, you changed the trajectory of my life for good. Thank you for representing and caring for me as though I were your own. My love for you two and your families is forever, always.
Blah, 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 blah.
And finally, I want to extend my deepest appreciation to Liz Cheney. Liz reminds us that true leadership is grounded in principle and that change can be achieved through unyielding loyalty to our democratic ideals. May this book serve as a testament to the transformative power of leaders like Liz, who inspire us to be agents of the truth in our republic and beyond. That we, as individuals, are enough. Author's note. As I write this, it has been just over a year since I testified before the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on June 28th, 2022. I chose to come forward to provide the committee and country with my truthful and candid observations of events that preceded the attack on the United States Capitol. I chose to come forward in enough to share how I arrived at that moment and what happened afterward. I relied on information both personal and public to write this memoir. My memory, text messages, call logs, journal entries, notes, calendars, and government interview transcripts. The essence of moments in dialogue are rendered according to my best recollections. Names and identifying characteristics of some individuals have been changed.
Get to the meat and potatoes.
Prologue. How had I gotten here? What had I done to wind up in this predicament? A featured player in a Washington political scandal, struggling to keep my composure under the glare of television lights as I became, depending on your political allegiance, briefly famous or infamous. The Cannon Caucus Room is one of the largest and grandest rooms in any of the House office buildings. With its high ornate ceilings and chandeliers, it looks like a Hollywood set that's meant to transform the often cramped and dingy reality of government office space into a majestic hall of power. As Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming would observe in a subsequent hearing, it had been home to the historic talks for women to be able to vote a century earlier.
You did the whole intro and thanking people and describing a place. You suck. You stupid, stupid girl. You wasted my time. But luckily, there is a story. There is a story. I mean, my God, woman. Okay, basically...
I was wondering.
Yeah, I was waiting. Get to the meat and potatoes. You're describing the shadow. Shut up. She talks about she's visiting Washington as a child. Hold on, I'm doing the cough button. Hold on. Coughing over. Thank you. She talked about visiting Washington as a child. And she took her life turned in January 6, 2021. She was 24 years old and she found herself in one of the most extraordinary,
unprecedented.
No. But good. But we'll go with that.
No, it's unprecedented.
No, it's not. It is unprecedented.
Yes, that's what I said.
Thank you that you agree with me. She was faced with a choice between loyalty to Trump or loyalty to the country. That's what she said she was faced with. She bravely came forward to become a pivotal witness. This happened in January 6th. Her book is called Enough. It reaches far beyond the typical insider. Again, blah, 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 and tells me nothing about her courage and blah, 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 blah.
It's a feminist book.
Yeah. Well, here she is on one of my favorite shows, Morning Joe, talking about her book, Enough. Maybe they'll explain a little bit more. Here we go.
For this next question, it's a big one, but I'm curious. For this next question, it's a big one, but I'm curious what your instincts, what your gut answer is, and that is if Donald Trump is reelected, ... Finish it for me.
I think that we need to do everything we can as a country to have productive conversations this next year to make sure that the closest that Donald Trump ever gets to the White House again is when he reports to the federal courthouse in Washington, D.C. for his trial.
There you go.
Okay.
Jim.
That's it. But she goes on. And let me see. Describing his wardrobe and blah, 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 blah. She's a good looking girl.
Oh no, really?
Yeah, let me see. She was on. I don't have it here. She was on. What's his name show? She did talk about it. Lawrence O'Donnell's show. Okay, here it is. I wonder if I have his podcast. Let me see. Nobody listens to Lawrence. Oh, here it is. So here's a little bit about what she said, okay? We're not going to listen to everything, but here it is, talking to Lawrence O'Donnell. So we get a better idea who is Cassidy Hutchinson. You know, that's it. We're just going to get
it. Now it is time for the last word with Lawrence O'Donnell. Lawrence, I know you have a very big guest coming up this evening, and I will be eagerly watching the television to hear everything you discuss with her.
Alex, I have two words for you. Cassidy Hutchinson.
Yes.
That's it.
That's all you got to say.
I got to go. I got a lot of work to do here.
Get into it.
Okay.
I'll be watching.
Thank you, Alex. Thank
Bye.
You. Well, she went to the Cherry Hill Mall in New Jersey looking for something to wear. She found a white blazer at Zara. There was no reason for anyone to notice the 25-year-old trying on that blazer. No one knew. She was out of work, behind on her rent, had lost Wi-Fi service at her apartment because she couldn't afford it anymore. The name on the overburdened credit card she used to pay for the blazer meant nothing to anyone in that store. It would be the last time in her life that she could go shopping anywhere in America and not be recognized. In some places, cheered, in some places, attacked or threatened. A week later, she combined the white blazer with rhinestone earrings from Kohl's and a necklace she received 12 years earlier on her 13th birthday. And She changed the course of history.
Today's witness, Ms. Cassidy Hutchinson, is another Republican and another former member of President Trump's White House staff. In her role working for the White House Chief of Staff, Ms. Hutchinson handled a vast number of sensitive issues. She worked in the West Wing, several steps down the hall from the Oval Office. Ms. Hutchinson spoke daily with members of Congress, with high-ranking officials in the administration, with senior White House staff, including Mr. Meadows, with White House counsel, lawyers, and with Mr. Tony Ornato, who served as the White House Deputy Chief of Staff. She also worked on a daily basis with members of the Secret Service who were posted in the White House. In short, Ms. Hutchinson was in a position to know a great deal about the happenings in the Trump White House. Ms. Hutchinson has already sat for 4 videotaped interviews with committee investigators, and we thank her very much for her cooperation and for her courage.
I saw Mr. Cipollone right before I walked out onto West Exec that morning, and Mr. Cipollone said something to the effect of, please make sure we don't go up to the Capitol, Cassidy. Keep in touch with me. We're going to get charged with every crime imaginable if we make that movement happen.
And do you remember which crimes Mr. Cipollone was concerned with?
In the days leading up to the 6th, we had conversations about potentially obstructing justice or defrauding the electoral count.
And now, thanks in part to her testimony, her boss, White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, and his boss, Donald Trump, have been charged with obstructing justice and defrauding the United States of America. Before Cassidy Hutchinson testified to the January 6th committee on live television, there was no special prosecutor investigating Donald Trump for anything, including his actions leading up to and on January 6th. The Justice Department investigation of Donald Trump, which is now headed by Special Prosecutor Jack Smith, was following the lead of the January 6th committee, whose star witness was Cassidy Hutchinson. Cassidy Hutchinson was 24 years old, working in the power corridor of the West Wing of the White House, when the crimes Mark Meadows and Donald Trump are now charged with were being committed in those rooms, according to the indictments. Cassidy Hutchinson didn't want to do it. The day the world met her on live television testifying to the January 6th committee, the very last thing she said after fighting off a panic attack right before testifying was, "Do I have to do this?" She had been asking herself that question silently for months. She was facing a monumental conflict with huge stakes between personal loyalty and truth. And in the end, truth won. That is the story Cassidy Hutchinson tells in her new book, Enough. Joining us now for the discussion about that is Cassidy Hutchinson. Thank you very much for doing this tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Ryan.
So how are you dealing with the panic attacks? Last night I saw you in the hallway here before going on Rachel's show. You didn't seem close to a panic attack at all. is this a calmer process than what you went through with the committee?
I'm more at peace now. I'm still nervous. It's a different type of nervous, though. You know, before I testified to the committee and to the country, I felt there was a lot riding on what I was going to say. But I was also calmed by the sense that I was fulfilling my sense of duty. This chapter of my life is different because I made the choice to come forward and share my story. So, there's a natural nerve element to it. But I, you know, as Alex Butterfield's book helped me, which I know we'll get to, but there have been forces throughout this journey that have helped me along the way in this section of my life. And now I feel very blessed and honored to be able to be here with you today to help share that story.
Your mother is the first person you thank in this book. And she is throughout the book as one of your guiding lights and gets you through some very difficult moments in this book. How is she dealing with this week in your life where you have now been doing this? I've seen you a little bit on some of the interviews you've done so far about this. This is a whole new stage for your mother. How's she doing?
She's doing really well. I think it's a difficult adjustment for her, too, and she is a concerned parent. You know, she wants the best for me, but I think that she also is guided by the sense of peace, knowing that what I am doing can hopefully help impact somebody, at least one other person, but hopefully we can help the country as well.
In the book, there are times when you are protecting your mother from the knowledge of what kind of pressure you're under and possibly the kinds of threats you could face, especially when you had become a cooperating witness with the January 6th Committee. The security requirements for that changed dramatically, and there were moments there where you didn't want your mother to know just how risky that could be. I suppose she's up to speed about how this works now.
She is. But I also think that, you know, she knows now that they're, like, it's going to be okay. And I've also made peace with this. You know, even if there are security threats now, it's not something we haven't dealt with before. And, you know, our goal and my goal is to be able to get past this moment in American history where you're afraid to speak out and tell the truth because you're worried that there are people that are going to threaten your safety and security. That's not normal. That's not normal politics. We need to get past that as a country.
So we know, and we know from your book, that you testified to District Attorney Fani Willis's grand jury in Georgia. She has said she has 150 witnesses for the trial against Donald Trump or Mark Meadows if they're tried together, both of those trials. Are you one of those witnesses?
I have cooperated with every investigation that I've been asked to testify to, and I will continue to do so in any and every investigation moving forward.
So has the district attorney given you any sense that you might be testifying in this first speedy trial that occurs next month?
What the heck?
If she does ask, we will be fully cooperative.
But so far she hasn't? There's no word from them about testimony.
I'll leave it with my prior statement for now.
Okay. And I understand that some of these questions will have that kind of the careful answers that you might have to give. So I want to do the same thing with Jack Smith's prosecution. Jack Smith's prosecution in Washington, D.C., that might not be occurring at all were it not for your testimony to the January 6th Committee. Will you be a witness in that case? This is the case of the United States of America versus Donald Trump. That's the name of the case.
If it wasn't for her, and this is how important she is, they would not be prosecuting Trump for January 6th with the Capitol riots. She was the one that came forward and gave the details so they could open up an investigation. That's how important she is. We're going to keep on listening to her. If she gives vague answers, we're going to stop it. But I want you to get to know who she is and what kind of person she is and under the threat that she is under. Here she is again. Cassidy Hutchinson, the name of the book is called Enough.
He is charged with crimes leading up to and on January 6th. He's the only defendant in that case. Do you expect to be a witness in that trial?
If Jack Smith and his team ask that I testify, I will cooperate with that.
Is that on an index card?
It is not, Lawrence, but what I want to be careful, not just for my interest, but I think that there is something to respect about our institutions of government, and our Department of Justice is designed to operate effectively behind closed doors.
Be able to do this.
And I would not want to get ahead of anything that the prosecution is doing. But I will say this too, Lawrence. What I think I testified to the committee was vital and it was important, but it was vital and important at the time because there weren't a lot of other people testifying. Hopefully my testimony helped open the doors to the people that could potentially provide more information.
So my next question, which I can anticipate the answer to already, is because of the book, not because of anything you said in the January 6th committee. And it is the question of, will you be a witness in the Florida case charging Donald Trump with violations of the Espionage Act, obstruction of justice. He also has two co-defendants, people who worked for him, who were in their way, similar positions to what you were in the White House with the president. And the reason I ask it is the book is filled with Mark Meadows burning documents in that fireplace in the White House Chief of Staff's office. There's a description of the classified documents being moved around, being stored in your desk where you're saying they shouldn't be stored, and then being handed to reporters. And all of that raises the question of whether you would have relevant information to that case in Florida, and would you be a witness there?
You know, I'm not sure that I would have relevant information necessarily directly pertinent to that case, Lawrence, but I think what I discuss in the book and overall in terms of how the administration, especially towards the end, handles classified information, the book helps shed light on that, but it also helps shed light on how frivolous certain individuals were handling classified information. You know, I can't speak exactly to what was brought down to Mar-a-Lago, but I could speak, and I can speak to how we were not handling classified information up to the standards that the national security community would expect.
You have descriptions of that going right up until 15 minutes before noon on Inauguration Day with Mark Meadows telling you that he's rushing over to the Justice Department to try to get a document declassified before Donald Trump loses the powers of the presidency. Were you a witness when you look back on it? Did you see things that help explain to you how all those documents got to Florida that the FBI found in their search warrant?
You know, I don't know exactly what documents were brought down to Florida. You know, I knew what, you know, in my hindsight now, I know that Mark particularly was dealing with. I don't know if that's part of the indictment, just to be completely frank with it, but it still speaks to how documents did get down there, and I can see how the documents that got down to Florida made their way down there. And, you know, I'm not under the impression that that was necessarily accidental.
Yeah, you mean by just the general way documents were managed in the West Wing, or were there specific moments you saw collections of boxes over there in the corner that you understood were going to Florida?
I was not directly part of the packing of the boxes process.
Okay. This book is so, I'm going to say, surprisingly well written, because these are the kinds of books that come out when someone's gone through a big event, and they generally chronicle the events clearly and hopefully helpfully, as this book certainly does. You had Mark Salter, who's a great writer, collaborating with you on this. He helped John McCain write books. It is an astonishingly personal book that you tell us everything there is to know about your family and how that interacts with these events. And in this story, you are failed by many men going through this story, not just Mark Meadows, your boss and the President of the United States, but beginning, sadly, with your father and the way your father failed you in the midst of your desperate attempt to try to get a lawyer, and you went to your father to try to get financial help from your father. You brought your January 6th subpoena with you to show to him. And I just want to use your audiobook to just tell the audience that passage of the book. We'll just listen to that.
I pulled my subpoena that I had folded in quarters out of my coat pocket and handed it to him. "Please, I just need you to listen," I said, my voice trembling. He looked at me, expecting me to say more, but I could not find my words. He threw the subpoena in the trash, ranting that I did not need to do anything it asked me to do. He had read online that it was not mandatory to comply with congressional subpoenas. The investigation was a witch hunt to take Donald down, he said. He prayed I was not there to ask for money to pay for a corrupt lawyer.
Or a different one.
Any lawyer who did not work for Donald was corrupt. He had raised me better than to turn my back on the people who cared about me, people like himself and Donald. "You didn't raise me at all," was all I thought of to say.
And that scene gets even rougher than that. This is, I'm sure it was painful to write. It's painful to read, and it is very much, it seems to me, as a reader, a very clear explanation of the kinds of pressures and predicament you were in.
Yeah, and, you know, that scene was difficult to write, as was a lot of the book, Lawrence. But I, you know, when I made the decision to write a book and about my experiences, I knew going into it that I wanted to bring people into how I actually experienced all that. You know, I felt that that was really critical because I wasn't just somebody that arrived at that moment on June 28th, and I had a lot of trial and error to get to that moment. I've made a lot of mistakes. I tried my best to take accountability for all of those. But I think what's important to the reader, so as Mark and I, Mark Salter, and I will thank you for your very kind words, because Mark Salter is a phenomenal human being, but helped pull the story out of me in a way that I wouldn't have been able to do on my own. But when Mark and I were writing this together, as Alex Butterfield's book helped me, which I know she also is guided by the sense of peace and dealt with before. And
to and on January 6th. He's the only defendant in that case. Do you expect to be a witness in that trial?
If Jack Smith and his
burning documents in that fireplace in the White House Chief of Staff's office, there's a description of the classified documents being moved around, being stored in your desk where you're saying they shouldn't be stored, and then being handed to reporters. And all of that raises the question of whether you would have relevant information to that case in Florida, and would you be a witness there?
I'm not sure that I would have relevant information.
Donald Trump loses the powers of the presidency. Were you a witness when you look back on it? Did you see things that help explain to you how all those documents got to Florida that the FBI found in their search warrant?
You know, I don't know exactly what documents.
Your family and how that interacts with these events. And you're a Republican. Mm-hmm. And then they cannot possibly understand why you would work for Donald Trump. And I get it, because I worked in Washington. I understand it. You started off in legislative affairs. You started off working in the Congress. And then in the White House, you're working in legislative affairs,
which isn't
directly with the president at all. It's trying to work with members of the House and the Senate to try to pass legislation. And you only end up in the White House Chief of Staff's office in April of the last year of the Trump presidency. It's really five or six months. Before you... it's only a few months before you're at the election, and then it's lost, and then there's the madness of the December. But in that process, what I discover in the book is that there was one person. There's one person that I confide in here, actually maybe a couple, Pat Cipollone, who, when it mattered, said, no, you can't do that. And I was sitting out here watching that presence and wondering, is there anyone in the West Wing who says to anyone above them, in your case, Mark Meadows, in Pat Cipollone's case, the president and Mark Meadows, that no, you can't do that? That's something you were doing a lot.
It is, and I took the job with Mark with the understanding that we would likely not always agree on everything. And I think, in large part, that's why Mark and I had an effective working relationship. Mark put a lot of trust in me.
Lawyers who would give you good advice. And then tell the whole truth to the January 6th committee. It's also fascinating to see that when you were getting bad advice from a Trump-paid lawyer and you were doing those depositions in the January 6th committee, you were trying to leave them clues. You were giving them incomplete answers where you were hoping, as you put it, there were breadcrumbs that they could follow up with other people.
Yeah, that's true. I wanted... I felt like I was in a difficult position in a lot of ways, because when I found my way back into Trump world and I had a Trump world attorney, there also is a sense of an understanding in that environment. And I know because I had been a part of that environment, and I spent a year trying to sort of separate from that environment. But there is an understanding that, you know, you have a higher loyalty. And I knew how I felt about January 6th. I knew how fervently I disagreed with it. But I also knew that it wasn't, I was not in a position, or I felt that I was not in a position to be completely empowered to tell the whole truth. But I wanted the truth to be known. And it took a lot of introspection and thinking and as a public servant. But, Lawrence, we're living in this era where...
refer to the family, meaning staying on the team of the Trump team. And then, toward the end of the story, there's the family of support that you discover that now includes your lawyers. And you were led to that family by maybe the key person in that family. There's a 97-year-old man who I know is watching this show tonight, who decades before you were born did what you did.
It would be hard, but I wanted to try. So I connected with an old friend, the fact that he was willing to share his story, but also share...
was more clear for him all the way through. If I get that subpoena, this is what I have to do. But it's so striking to me that someone who did what you did 50 years ago speaks to you through this book.
Oh, God.
When you gave your...
there was some false reporting from Trump sources immediately after your testimony saying that the crazy behavior that you described of Donald Trump with his Secret Service detail when he was trying to go to the Capitol never happened. Let's listen to that testimony.
When I returned to the White House, I walked upstairs towards the Chief of Staff's office, and I noticed Mr. Renato lingering outside of the office. And once we had made eye contact, he quickly waved me to go into his office, which was just across the hall from mine. When I went in, he shut the door, and I noticed Bobby Engel, who is the head of Mr. Trump's security detail, sitting in a chair, looking somewhat discombobulated and a little lost. I looked at Tony, and he had said, "Did you effing hear what happened in the Beast?" I said, "No, Tony, I just got back. What happened?" Tony proceeded to tell me that when the president got in the Beast, he was under the impression from Mr. Meadows that the off-the-record movement to the Capitol was still possible and likely to happen, but that Bobby had more information. So once the president had gotten into the vehicle with Bobby, he thought that they were going up to the Capitol, and when Bobby had relayed to him, "We're not, we don't have the assets to do it, it's not secure, we're going back to the West Wing," the president had very strong, a very angry response to that. Tony described him as being irate. The president said something to the effect of, "I'm the effing president, take me up to the Capitol now." To which Bobby responded, "Sir, we have to go back to the West Wing." The president reached up towards the front of the vehicle to grab at the steering wheel. Mr. Engel grabbed his arm, said, "Sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel. We're going back to the West Wing. We're not going to the Capitol." Mr. Trump then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. And when Mr. Renato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
And Tony Renato then testified under oath to the committee, "I do not recall," that he had no memory of that conversation.
You know, Lawrence, I find it sort of ironic that we see this pattern emerge in Trump world a lot where we have men whose memories often fail them. I stand by my testimony to the committee. I stand by my testimony provided to the Department of Justice. I stand by my testimony provided to Fulton County investigators. And I stand by everything I described in the book.
Well, you say in the book that the Trump-funded lawyer who you started with was advising you to say, "I do not recall," pretty much all the time, even when you did recall.
You know, that's correct. You know, there also was an element of that, too. If you don't recall an event fully, or let's not refresh your memory on things. Mm-hmm. But I think looking at that as a whole, I think That's the experience of a lot of people in Trump world who have Trump world appointed attorneys. I think of the individual in Florida in the Mar-a-Lago case who has recently switched, according to public reporting, who has recently switched a counsel from a Trump-appointed attorney to a public defender or a public attorney, because that individual was counseled to not recall certain events to protect the president. It's not the job of individuals who have witnessed events to protect somebody else. It's the job of individuals to share what they know with investigators. That's the only way our justice system will continue to work. And that had a profound impact in why I also decided to come forward with more information. I made that choice. I made that conscious choice to come forward. I didn't have to do that.
Blah, blah, blah.
Stupid. But I went over and I looked into a mirror. He asked me if I liked what I was looking at, not my physical appearance. Did I like the person that was looking back at me? Could I live with that person for the rest of my life? Because I am the only person that has to live with the decisions and the choices that I make. So, you know, whether it's the two individuals that are Mr. Trump's co-defendants in the case in Florida, or if it's anybody that finds themselves in a similar predicament to me, you know, I don't know if it would be the mirror test that proved pretty effective for me, but just to think long and hard about where your loyalties end. Now that I'm on the other side, I see the dangers of Donald Trump, and I see the dangers of what he requires and this dual sense of loyalty, and that's not normal. It's wrong. And, you know, I think we need to make sure that Donald Trump cannot continue exploiting vulnerable Americans, whether it's people that work for him or whether it's his loyal base of supporters who he has continuously fooled for the last 7 years and potentially in this next election cycle.
A last word from Cassidy Hutchinson right after this break. Were those things that made sense in the moment or didn't? Like,
there are a lot of things that did not make sense in the moment.
All right.
But
to the more important evidentiary point here, that's a great interest of the prosecutors. You are standing there and you hear Donald Trump say, "I don't want people to know we lost. This is embarrassing." In Fulton County, Georgia, that is very important evidence against Defendant Trump. It's very important evidence against Defendant Trump in Washington, D.C., in Jack Smith's case. I assume that story was told. You told that story to the grand jury in Georgia?
To every government entity, yes. It's also in my public transcripts with the January 6th committee.
So that would be one of the key points, that reasons that you would be called as a witness in those prosecutions.
Potentially, yes. There also have been several people that have testified on the record to being in Donald Trump's presence when he admitted that he lost the election. There are also several people on the record, to be fair on both sides, and it's been my committee transcripts as well as other government entities, that, you know, sometimes you admit that he hadn't lost or he was questioning whether he had lost. Again, I can't climb into his psyche, but it seemed pretty clear to me that he knew that he lost the election. Mark Meadows knew that he lost the election, but they were doing everything they could to try to prove that the election was stolen somehow. You can't prove that an election is stolen when it was not stolen. You can't prove an election was stolen when it was free and fair, and Joe Biden was the duly elected president.
No one who's ever been on this program has been as close to Kevin McCarthy as you have been. This book shows you were very close to Kevin McCarthy, first name basis, calling him Kevin, very friendly. Let's watch what Kevin McCarthy said after the attack on the Capitol on January 6th.
The president bears responsibility for Wednesday's attack on Congress by mob rioters. He should have immediately denounced the mob when he saw what was unfolding. These facts require immediate action by President Trump. Accept his share of responsibility. Quell the brewing unrest, and ensure President-elect Biden is able to successfully begin his term.
How did you feel about your friend Kevin when you saw him say that, and how do you feel about where he is now?
I felt proud of Kevin in that moment, and I would also like to say that I did continue to work for Donald Trump, so I would be a longer conversation, but I go into that in the book a lot, my personal struggle with that. But that was the Kevin that I was proud of. That is the leader that I saw in Kevin McCarthy. But then a couple weeks later, Kevin was down at Mar-a-Lago with Donald Trump, seemingly apologizing and trying to make up with him. Look, Kevin is the most powerful Republican in our government right now. He is third in line to the presidency. Kevin has an opportunity to stop this. And it is Kevin's responsibility to not only lead a Republican conference through this trying time, but it's his responsibility to emerge as a leader. It's his responsibility to emerge as a leader for our country so we can explain to our children how we overcame this. I have faith Kevin could do that if he wanted to. I don't know that he would, but I hope that he would find the courage to do that, because I did have faith in Kevin McCarthy, and I do respect him. But power is a fickle thing, and I would hope that he has that hindsight in this next year.
Cassidy Hutchinson, once again, wiser than the men you work with.
All right. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, that was lengthy.
Right. I was trying to get to the meat and potatoes, and all I got was the potatoes. Try to get the meat. Bottom line, she was there. She went, spoke to the Senate about Donald Trump's behavior, about hiding documents. She witnessed it. She knew where they were. Donald Trump's lawyers tried to get her to lie. And tell her that she doesn't recall what she did recall. And just today, Donald Trump, like I said, Donald Trump came, I guess it was yesterday, that he was presented in front of a judge. And he basically laughed at Donald Trump's lawyer, saying that it's okay to exaggerate your funds. And he made money, they made money, which to harm. And the judge says, are you fucking kidding me? And he said that... we don't even need a jury on this one. This is blatant fraud. It was a civil suit. It was fraud. They named Donald Trump and his sons on it. And we'll see what happens. He's threatened to lose his business license in New York, that he cannot do business in New York anymore. He's going to lose his LLC, which is when you go into business, you it's your license and everything. So he's going to lose his license to do business in New York. And chances are he may lose Trump Towers. You know, sometimes when you lose money, it's worse than jail. You know, the money, the power.
For him,
all your money. It would be. It's humiliating. For him lying, and this whole thing was him lying about how big his Trump Towers was and how much money he made, or he lowered the, he raised the amount of what he's worth. And, that's got to do with investors and banking people lying to them, which is called fraud. And they got him on it. Now, Trump being Trump, when we come back, Trump has something to say about that. And he just went off. He just went off. And when we come back, we're going to read what he said and calling her a whore and stuff like that. You know, and so I was talking to my good friend, the psychic Pat Overland, about, you know, it's the Wild Wild West, man. When you have the President of the United States calling a person a whore, said that he's going to go after the media, he's going to lock them up, he's going to execute one of his generals because he spoke out. It's the Wild Wild West, and we'll be right back. And our show's almost over with the great Pat Overland. And if you'd like to come into the show, well, if you're reading this, you're listening to the show, which I know you are, and a lot of people listen to the show when they get home because they see the ratings. But you already know the number to call in. It's 319-527-6099. That's 319-527-6099. Did I say it right? 6099? That's what I said, 6099.
You should probably say it slower for the people that are trying to write it down.
Okay, I will. You're absolutely right. We have our hearing impaired audience, which we have Sarge will come in and make sure they hear the show. And for those people who are very slow, I will read it again. 319. Da, 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 527-6099. That's the number that you can call. Get into the studio, get your voice heard. You're listening to me, but you're really listening to Pat Overland. That's who you're really listening to. She has the power. She has the power. She will cast a spell on your ass. Better get your ass in
you're
here.
You're doing all the talking.
She's a, Yes, but Pat makes sense. I'm doing the talking, but when Pat talks, it makes sense. We'll be right back. Donald Trump has something to say. I'm going to read what he has to say on Truth Social. And we can get into some other stuff, too. But we'll be right back. Time for coffee. Welcome to the Wild Wild West.
Yes.
The Wild Wild West.
Thank you.
It is to drink a hot cup of coffee. It's like, ow, before a 2-minute song.
Well, don't
Trump
try
goes
to
off.
Drink it that fast.
Oh, yes, I got to let it cool.
Yeah, you know
so
what?
Said,
my dad got cancer in the throat from the larynx or something, from drinking very hot coffee.
Wow.
Yeah, don't do that.
Okay. Things I must learn and to put on my to-do list. Don't drink hot coffee.
Not really hot, no.
And listen to a woman says, no, Brian, I'm on my period. Things I must learn.
Oh, jeez. That's a waste of 1 week a month.
That sure is. And my reply to that is, your mouth not bleeding.
You're not supposed to do that. Oh, you silly goose.
I know. Well, Donald Trump got upset. And like
what
I said 2 days ago or yesterday, that the judge just said, you know, this is just fraud. Well, Trump went on his social media page called Truth Social. And here's what he had to say. I've been unfairly sued by the Trump-hating Democrat attorney, General of New York State, Letitia James, over the false fact that I inflated my financial statements in order to borrow money from the banks. The judge in this case, Arthur F. Engoron, he refused to allow this case to go to the commercial division where it belongs, because he is a Trump hater, beyond even A.G. James, who campaigned against me, spewing horrible inflammatory statements with false and inflammatory. And he's doing this in caps. I am not even allowed a jury. The facts are simple. In caps, big caps. I am worth much more than that. See, that's hate. This is what, you know, rape doesn't bother Donald Trump. It doesn't bother him. What only bothers Donald Trump is that you think he's not rich. That really kills him, because he's in caps right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in caps. He goes, I am worth much more than the numbers shown on my financial statements. Okay. Now, here's where the crazy kicks in, right? The crazy. See, when people talk about Biden, that he's, you know, he missteps here. But here's when you have a real crazy fool. Numbers are numbers. You know, we get assessments on how much your property is worth, your car is worth, how much this is worth. This is what the United States can tell you your value. This is how we determine who's rich, who's poor. But not according to crazy Trump. Trump says this, and you tell me it's not even, you tell me this is not crazy. I am worth more than what the number is shown on my financial statements. Now, I could say that to my bank, right? I could go in my bank account and I go, oh, well, I should have more, and I have more. I'm going to call my bank and say, you know what, we got a problem. And I can hear the thing, like, I'll dial the bank, go, hello, bank. Oh, hello, Mr. Jackson. Hello, bank. Hey, bank, I looked at my statement. Yes, Mr. Jackson, it says I only have this much in the bank. Well, that's what you do. No, I'm worth more than that. What? Yes. Give me more. My value. I'm worth more than that, than this silly statement that you're doing. Well, sir, we can only go by what you put in the bank, and it has a statement. No, that's a lie. More. More, more, more. Put more zeros in there. And I appreciate it. Thank you. This is basically what he's saying.
Elon must drive him crazy.
Yeah. This is what Donald Trump is saying. I am worth much more than what this statement is showing, my financial statement is showing.
I'd like to know what he owns then.
Right. He's thinking he's worth much more. See, this is the day. You know, I can understand somebody slow. Okay. But to be a sociopath and telling people, the financial institution who he borrows money from, And he lied about his net worth because the judge says, you're lying like a dog. You went 20 times more than you're worth. And Donald Trump says, well, I think I'm worth that. That's not what it says, you dumb fuck. Well, he didn't say dumb fuck. I included that in. I improv. Thank you. I went to acting school. Thank you very much. Mm.
Pat's language skills.
Yes. I learned it in acting school. I never cussed. I went to acting school. What? I have to say this. Yes, Brian, you're in acting school. You are playing this detective, and you find a dead body, and this is what you say. Oh, fuck. Well, can I say, oh, my gosh, there's a dead body? No, you can't, you dumb shit. Okay. And that's how it is. That's how it is. I wanted to pass school, so I had to learn to swear. And that's worry with it. So, and then it says, then Trump yells again, I didn't even include my most valuable asset, my brand. See, that's the thing that gets Donald Trump. See, here's why Donald Trump goes off into Never Never Land. See, Donald Trump brand is his name. And if Donald Trump loses, his brand's a loser. He cannot afford to have his brand, which is his name, a loser. Therefore, he kind of exaggerates a little bit to make his brand his name as a rich billionaire, which he's not. Now, when you have to beg people to help you pay for your lawyers with donations, And then he says, the banks were paid back in full, sometimes early. There were no defaults. The banks made money, were represented by the best law firms, and were very happy there was no victims. And then he said, number four, on the front page of the financial statement, there is a strong disclaimer clause telling all not to reply on these. And people replied. The judge said, just because there were no victims and the banks were paid back, doesn't count out fraud. You exaggerated how much your apartment you're living in worth. You exaggerated what your net worth is. Just get on Forbes 100 thing. I have a thing. You know, Donald Trump used to do this thing, and this goes back in the day. That Donald Trump used to call the press and pretend he was somebody else to let the press know what a great guy Donald Trump was, and he was Donald Trump. It was the worst accent ever. I don't even know how I could pull it up. Donald, let me see if I can pull that up. It's the funniest shit that he posed as somebody else, that he was Donald Trump's publicist, and it was Donald Trump. Bragging about how good Donald was, and Donald was a great lover. This is what his press said. I don't know if I could pull it up by himself. As a publicity. Let me see if that pulls it up. It's funnier than hell. See if I can pull it. I'm taking a stab at this. Let's see. I can't. It is the funniest shit. I'm going to have more time to pull it up. But he did do that. He played himself, and he used to call up radio stations and say how great Donald Trump was, and it was him, but he posed as, what was his son's name? What was his son's name? Donald Trump's son. Damn, my short memory.
I can't remember.
This Melania, what is his son's name? Oh, Jesus, I forgot his son's name. Because I think he
Jared
used that name.
His son-in-law.
Oh, Jared's the son-in-law. What was his name? Barron. So he used to. I think he used the name Barron. Let me see, because this is funnier than hell. Donald Trump played himself as. Let me see. Let me put that in here. See if it comes up as Barron. And let me see if that pulls up. Here it is. Trump denies fake 1991 call to reporters Let's hear this. This is 19. Let's hear this. Custom t-shirt. It says Trump denies fake 1991 call to reporter. Donald Trump says the voice of a man who sounds like him posing as his spokesman is not him. And so you decide. Here it is right here. It's the funniest shit. This is 1991, by the way. Here we
go. The real amazing story of Donald Trump's old spokesman, as the Washington Post headline writes, may be that it's been such an open secret for so long, it's hard to believe that anyone is still questioning it.
What's your name again? John Miller.
It was back in the 1980s, and when the flashy New York real estate mogul needed to get a bit of news out, the newspaper reports it was common knowledge among New York reporters that Trump just assumed a different name and handled the media calls himself, like this call from reporter Sue Carswell at People magazine concerning Trump's breakup with girlfriend Marla Maples.
He really decided that he wasn't, he didn't want to make the commitment. He didn't want to make a commitment. He really thought it was too soon. He's coming out of a marriage and he's starting to do tremendously well financially. And he just thought it was too soon to make any commitment to anybody.
So what is going to happen with her? Is she being asked to leave or is she going to be allowed to stay?
Well, he treats everybody well. And,
yeah.
You don't know him, but he's a...
No, I have met him.
Have you met him?
Yes.
He's a good guy, and he's not going to hurt anybody. He treated his wife well, and he won't treat Marla well. And, he's somebody that has a lot of options. And, frankly, he gets called by everybody. He gets called by everybody in the book in terms of women.
If that John Miller sounds like Trump, it's because audio forensic expert Tom Owen says, in his opinion, it is.
I can conclude with a fair degree of scientific certainty that it is Donald Trump's voice.
This afternoon, Owens compared the John Miller on that phone call with People magazine to the real Donald Trump interviewed on CNN's Larry King Live in the 1990s. Due to the quality of the old recordings, he couldn't use his biometric analysis that he says would be absolutely certain, but based on pitch, tone, cadence, and his expertise, John Miller and Donald Trump are one and the same.
Yes, it's my opinion that it is Donald Trump's voice.
Reportedly, Trump even tacitly admitted under oath to using one of his false PR names in a 1990 court testimony when he said, "I believe on occasion I used that name."
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Donald.
Trump was confronted with the taped phone call and the Washington Post story on Friday's Today Show.
No, I don't think it, I don't know anything about it. You're telling me about it for the first time, and it doesn't sound like my voice at all. I have many, many people that are trying to imitate my voice, and you can imagine that. And this sounds like one of the scams, one of the many scams. Doesn't sound like me.
There you go. Even back then, he was trying to do a scam, using his own voice to be his own publicist. Donald Trump is really good with women. He loves women, and he's a great man, and he's a great lover. I witnessed him in the shower one day, and he has a very mighty penis. I've never seen a penis so mighty in my life. And he named his penis Trump Jr., and I think it's just as powerful as Donald Trump. And I am not Donald Trump, but just a second. We got a call for Donald Trump. Just a second, I got to get that. Oh, no, it's not for me. I'm the publicist. Even then, the guy was a shyster. Even then. And guess what? He's running for president of the United States. We wonder how we got here, Why did Donald Trump run for the president of the United States? Because he was bullied. He was humiliated. And who humiliated him was Obama. So they were at a party one time, and they did this, and Obama was there, and he humiliated Donald Trump, and they laughed at him. So he got his butt hurt feelings, and he decided to run for president and destroy America. That's basically the story. Now, how do we get a rapist in the White House? And did he mention something about he called that woman a whore? Well, Donald Trump knows about whores. Didn't he pay that woman $150,000, that porn star, to keep quiet? And then I have to think, I have to think. And I'm sorry, ladies, but no Puse is worth $150,000. I'm sorry. You can get, I know this girl in Shaniqua on the corner of Main and Inglewood Boulevard. She could have done the same thing for $50,000. But you paid $150,000. For one night of what? You know what I'm saying? You know, I don't know if anyone, I don't know if some people are worth $150,000. Their value. Ask insurance people who invest in people and take insurance out on you. Not many people are worth $150,000, let alone a piece of tail. So back then, you already knew it. I got to give them credit for being a publicity person. Okay, so be it. So right now, here's what Trump has to say. He reads his rants on social media, and he's pissed. He is just fucking pissed, man. Just pissed. He says this, page two. He's not done. This was September 25th, which was 2 days ago. He, again, what hits Donald Trump more than rape or anything is fraud, a line about how much money he has. That kills him. So, again, he's typing in caps, and he's saying page two. This is page two now on social media, September 25th. He says, financial statements. The disclaimer clause tells anyone reviewing the data, including financial institutions, to do their own research and analysis. It's a non-reliance clause. What Donald Trump is saying is like, well, do your own research if you don't believe me. That's what he's saying. You know, this is what I say, this is what I believe, but if you don't believe me, do your own research. That's what it means. You do your own research and analysis. Additionally, to my being worth far more than is shown, it says, again, not putting down a value for my biggest asset, which is my brand. The company has hundreds of millions of dollars in cash. This is what – see, you know, I can understand Biden being kind of slow, but you have a grown-ass man using words as a child. How much are you worth, President? Hundreds of millions of dollars in cash. Because Donald Trump is not liquid. Donald Trump has a lot of property that's what gets his worth. He's not liquid in cash that he's worth this, but Donald Trump wants you to believe that he's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Hundreds of millions of dollars. Which can be $500 million, $800 million, $900 million, that he's worth that. But yet he has to borrow a donation money to help pay for his lawyers. You'll see him right now. Can you please send me money so I can pay for my lawyers? But I'm worth hundreds of millions of dollars in cash. He says he has very little debt, which is a lie. The banks are after his ass like you would not believe, and he doesn't even pay his lawyers. He said it's a great company that has been slandered and maligned by this politically motivated witch hunt. Yeah, it is a witch hunt, and we caught our witch. How you doing, Sabrina? There Donald Trump goes flying on his broom across the White House lights. And we have our own witch here, right, witch? Witch Pat Oberlin?
Oh, yeah.
Now, Pat knows witches, and Donald Trump is one of the best witches they have. Even on Halloween, the witches get together and they carve a pumpkin of Donald Trump's face, and there's a black cat on it. Donald Trump is the biggest witch ever, right, Pat?
Yeah, I would never give him that title. Never give him that title. No, that's an insult to a lot of witches, you know.
That is. Next thing you know, I'm not listening to you show anymore, Brian. Well, who are you? I'm a witch. Oh. You're losing the witch audience, you bastard. You bastard. Oh, shit. Come back, witches and warlocks. I need you for the ratings. Ah, we're going to catch a spell on you, make you a decent person. How dare you? Sorry, witches, if I offended you. I'm trying to
Okay. That's acceptable. Yeah.
You think so? You know...
Yeah.
So he goes on, and he's not done yet. 3 hours ago. If I weren't running for president and winning, none of these politically motivated lawsuits will be taking place. They will. You committed a crime. Doesn't matter if you're running for office or you're running for your life. You committed a crime, sir. Sorry. Does anybody notice that after years and years, they're all happening right in the middle of my campaign? We, and then he types in caps, we will take back the White House and make America great again. Yet you're a thief. You're a fraud. You've been indicted 4 times. You've been indicted for rape. And then you're going to be dragged back in a civil lawsuit for rape again. You lied to people. You threatened people. You want to execute the general. You even wanted to, you were in the tape, you didn't hear it because she kept rambling on. But Kathy said Donald Trump was also saying, hang Mike Pence, his own vice president. He was chanting that as he was watching it on TV. And you want to make America great again. You want to make America great. How bad are we now if this is what's happening and we're voting for this numbnut, this traitor, and he wants to make America great again? So he's doing it again, folks.
I don't
folks.
See how that makes America great.
I don't see it at all. You know what makes America great?
Either.
I'll tell you what makes it. I'll tell you one word that makes America great. One word. Penis. Penis. America.
Okay, but a couple other countries have got you beat.
I don't know. We swagger our penis throughout the world. We got big balls and a penis. And we're happy to show it. We're happy to show our penises to the world. We're happy to show our big balls to the world. This is how big our balls are. That's what it is. We will fight for penis. And that's what it is. Penis.
Can you say it again?
Penis. God bless America, penis. The organ that I love, stand beside him and guide him. There you go. Penis. 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 Penis.
You're losing it.
Oh, so Trump is not done. So Trump is already, and he did this when he in 2016 called it right when it started. He called the election rigged and rigged because he knew he was going to lose. He just did it again 3 hours ago. 3 hours ago, he's already calling the election 24. The election interference scam. He's already doing it. He's letting you know it's already going to be a scam in 2024. He's getting people up right now. And Donald Trump, three hours ago, he said this, and it's coming from his dirty little filthy mouth. Filthy, filthy, dirty, naughty mouth from Donald Trump. He said this 3 hours ago. We need justice in our country. I agree, sir. You need to be locked up. Thank you. You need to be placed in solitary confinement where you don't be around any human beings at all. So I agree with him. We need justice. That's right. You need to be locked up, sir. We need justice in our country, which is in caps. The rest is in normal typing. This political hack judge who values Mar-a-Lago, the most spectacular parcel of real estate in Palm Beach, and perhaps all of Florida, this is what Donald Trump said.
Really?
At $18 million, in order to reduce valuations of my financial statement, which are, in fact, lower than my actual net worth. Now, again, the appraisers and the assessments and everything are saying, sir, your Mar-a-Lago place is not more than $18 million, and we're putting it high. And Trump said, bullshit! Bullshit! And he spelled it B-U-L-L-S-H-I-Z. Trump. Bullshit. I guess that's more than bullshit. There you go. Donald Trump says, I had very unfair judges since entering politics, but nobody, you know, I wish we could say that. next time a black kid goes in front of a judge and says, "You are well, you have a crime, you stole this or you did drugs," you'll be sentenced to 5 years in jail. Bullshit! Unfair judge. Give me a judge that would agree with me. He needs to be off the bench. And when does that work? Forget the crime.
I don't know.
It's just that they hate me. That's what it is. It's the crime. Never mind the crime. It's that you don't really like me. This is his defense. So Trump is getting pissed off. He's saying, I have been unfair, but nobody has been unhinged as this guy. Mar-a-Lago is worth perhaps 100 times more than he values it. Other properties are likewise worth substantially more. I am worth billions with an S. With an S.
Really?
I am worth billions.
In
more
his mind.
Than. Exactly. See, this is what I'm trying to say. You can say things about Joe Biden. And believe me, sometimes when Biden talks, I cringe. It's like, what the fuck? You know, when you hear Biden talk, you go, you have to say at the end, what the fuck? I know he means well. And it comes from his heart. And then what gets to me about Biden, because I'm not going to go just on Trump, but what gets to me about Biden is when he whispers. It's really creepy. He'll say, well, our financial institution is going strong, and COVID, we have it under control. And you know what, kids? It's working. It's like, uh-oh, creepy and cringy. Stop whispering. That's what gets to me when Biden does that. I don't know if did you ever hear that, Pat? Biden will do that.
Yeah, I have.
It's just so, when he leans that, he gets that slow lean and a shaky head, and he whispers, hey, you know what, kids? And it's like, what do you mean, kids? It's like you're some creepy clown at some kind of kid party. Knock it off. And you know what? It's working. Uncle Joe is working for you. It's like,
well, you know,
okay,
everybody
you got my
is a kid compared to him.
That is true.
I mean, he'd consider me a kid.
Yeah, he would. Hey, kid. And you know what? He'll whisper, and then he'll touch you, and he'll whisper to you. He'll put his hands on your shoulder and going, you're a good kid. You want some candy? I am the president. This is a good kid, I declare.
It
gets a little creepy.
Candy. Now it's like you want to join. You know?
Yeah, exactly. You want, like back in the day, you had the cigarette gum. Now you have joint gum. You want to join his bubble gum. Let's start the kids off early. My God. So he does that, and it kind of is creepy. You know what I mean? Stop it. Stop it. Just stop it, Biden. So I can live with that, but I cannot live with a guy who's such a deranged sociopath that he is saying the institutions are wrong, which he's borrowing money from, and which they're stating why you're borrowing money, depending on how much you're worth as to how much we're going to give you. And they're telling you that, no, you're wrong. But he says it's 100 times more. Mar-a-Lago's worth perhaps 100 times more? 100. Do you understand what 100 times more of anything is? Of anything.
He doesn't, obviously.
Exactly. This is what scares me about this delusional lunatic.
Yeah,
he says he's worth billions with
a few apples.
Exactly. He says he's worth billions with an S at the end of it. Billions. I am worth billions more than my very conservatively values it. Other properties are likewise more substantially more. I can't even talk. I am worth billions more than my financial statements, and therefore could have not have defrauded the banks who all made money and we're all paid back or are current with no defaults or any other problems. Additionally, there is a powerful disclaimer clause, that's what he said, and blah, blah, blah. Donald Trump, of course, then Donald Trump gets upset, and he goes to his best friend, Tucker Carlson, as we called it, Fucker Carlson. Because he has to. He's pissed. It says here, just then, Tucker Carlson went live with Donald Trump minutes ago, exposing the fake government and all the media puppets. I don't know if I could play it. It just has a picture of it. Donald Trump goes live, join the channel. Do I really want to join the channel? I feel so filthy. So filthy if I join you guys. Filthy, filthy people. Anyway, he went on there. If you want to see it, I'm sure there's somewhere around here. I'm not joining that bullshit. So he called the judge names. He's lying about it. He's worth more than that. But he devalued his thing so he didn't have to pay for taxes. But now he says, I'm worth more. He's just a nutcase. Just a nutcase. And he's running for president of the United States.
He's Make running for president wonder. Of the United States.
Makes you wonder about America, right? That's and then the punishment would have been death. Trump blows on retiring general. He's a general, he's a hero, and Trump wants to execute him because he said something bad about him. There you go.
It's pretty extreme.
What he wants to do. I know. It says here, last thing on Trump, because we're going to get to something else. Unhinged Trump lunacy will be GOP's downfall if they nominate him. Now, that's according to the Wall Street Journal. Now, who owns the Wall Street Journal? Rupert Murdoch from Fox. It's a conservative newspaper. And they say he's unhinged. They say he's cuckoo. He didn't fly over the cuckoo's nest. He landed in there, made it a home, and called it Mar-a-Lago. That's what he did with the cuckoo's nest. He's a cuckoo. Donald Trump suggested the other day that General Mark Milley, the nation's biggest military officer, deserves execution, as in death. The Wall Street Journal board writes, he said NBC. Yeah, not only he's going after the general, he's going after NBC. He said NBC should be investigated for treason. He's calling the NBC should be arrested for treason because they say bad things about him. This is how dangerous and deranged this guy is. He's going after a broadcast channel, Channel 4, NBC.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
National Broadcast System. Right.
Isn't it?
Right. The peacock is so worried that it doesn't shed its feathers anymore. The poor peacock, he's stressed out. Poor little peacock. NBC. So he wants to. He calls NBC to be a traitor of the United States because they said something bad about him. And he says that the FBI should raid the homes of the Senate Democrats, and he wants the FBI to raid all the Democrats, raid their homes.
For what? For what?
He doesn't know. He doesn't know. He just wants them raided. Then he accused President Biden of being manipulated by the fascists in the White House. The board warns that these unhinged posts are the type of lunacy Republicans can expect to deal with if they nominate Trump. And some Republicans are feeling giddy these days because Mr. Biden is down in the polls, losing head-to-head against Trump. But many voters have not forgotten. But many voters may have forgotten what it was like to hear from Trump day after day. Biden gets more attention now, and Mr. Trump is ducking the GOP presidential debates. But if Trump is nominated again, his every word will get attention. That's the baggage Republicans will carry, and the reason Democrats think even Mr. Biden can win. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I said this before, and I said it again, and I called the last election. I called it. When they had the numbers in the polls, like Trump and Biden together, I said, uh-uh. Because once they get behind that curtain or they're in that little panel where nobody can see who they're voting for, Kens will vote for Biden. Right now, you're not going to hear it. You're going to hear it. They don't want the cross talk about or getting in trouble if they go against Trump. But when the voting takes place, they will vote for Biden. Biden will win. because they don't trust this motherfucker. They're afraid of this motherfucker. And that's what it is. You're afraid. If you're afraid of somebody, you don't want them to gain more power and you have to walk on eggshells if he gets pissed off. You want them gone. That's just normal. That's human nature. How did we get here? We're going to hear how we got here with Trump. We're not going to go in full thing. We'll go in full thing tomorrow. But how did we get here, and what did they think of him? What was the beginning? This was the beginning, and then we're going to talk about witchcraft, and we're going to talk about mafia, and we're going to talk about Pat, and then I'm going to read tarot cards. We got a lot.
You just
fit
preaching
in.
Now, aren't you?
I just read them. The tarot, they tell me what to say, and they give me simple words. But here it is. Donald Trump, how we got here. Here's the beginning. Listen to this. It's only 3 minutes. Listen.
Intelligence assets crucial to U.S. national security. This all stemmed from Trump's fury that the United States had an $18 billion annual trade deficit with South Korea and was spending $3.5 billion a year to keep U.S. troops there. Despite almost daily reports of chaos and discord in the White House, the public did not know how bad the internal situation actually was. Trump was always shifting, rarely fixed, erratic. He would get in a bad mood. Something large or small would infuriate him, and he would say about the Corus trade agreement, "We're withdrawing today." But now there was the letter, dated September 5th, 2017, a potential trigger to a national security catastrophe. Cohn was worried Trump would sign the letter if he saw it. Cohn removed the letter draft from the Resolute desk. He placed it in a blue folder marked Keep. "I stole it off his desk," he later told an associate. "I wouldn't let him see it. He's never going to see that document. Got to protect the country." In the anarchy and disorder of the White House and Trump's mind, the president never noticed the missing letter. Ordinarily, Rob Porter, the staff secretary and organizer of presidential paperwork, would have been responsible for producing letters like this to the South Korean president. But this time, alarmingly, the letter draft had come to Trump through an unknown channel. Staff secretary is one of the low-profile but critical roles in any White House. For months, Porter had been briefing Trump on decision memos and other presidential documents, including the most sensitive national security authorizations for military and covert CIA activities. Porter, 6'4", rail-thin, 40 years old and raised a Mormon, was one of the gray men, an organization man with little flash who had attended Harvard and Harvard Law School and been a Rhodes Scholar. Porter later discovered there were multiple copies of the draft letter, and either Cohn or he made sure none remained on the president's desk. Cohn and Porter worked together to derail what they believed were Trump's most impulsive and dangerous orders. That document and others like it just disappeared. When Trump had a draft on his desk to proofread, Cohn at times would just yank it, and the president would forget about it. But if it was on his desk, he'd sign it. "It's not what we did for the country," Cohn said privately. "It's what we saved him from doing." It was no less than an administrative coup d'etat, an undermining of the will of the President of the United States and his constitutional authority. In addition to coordinating policy decisions and schedules and running the paperwork for the president, Porter told an associate, "A third of my job was trying to react to some of the really dangerous ideas that he had and try to give him reasons to believe that maybe they weren't such good ideas." Another strategy was to delay, procrastinate, cite legal restrictions. Lawyer Porter said, "But slow walking things or not taking things up to him or telling him rightly, not just as an excuse, but this needs to be vetted or we need to do more process on this or we don't have legal counsel clearance," that happened 10 times more frequently than taking papers from his desk. It felt like we were walking along the edge of the cliff perpetually. There were days or weeks when the operation seemed under control and they were a couple of steps back from the edge. Other times we would fall over the edge and an action would be taken. It was like you were always walking right there on the edge. Although Trump never mentioned the missing September 5th letter, he did not forget what he wanted to do about the trade agreement. There were several different iterations of that letter, Porter told an associate. Later, in an Oval Office meeting, the South Korean agreement was being heatedly debated. I don't care, Trump said. I'm tired of these arguments. I don't want to hear about it anymore. We're getting out of chorus. He started to dictate a new letter he wanted to send. Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, took Trump's words seriously. Jared, 36, was a senior White House advisor and had a self-possessed, almost aristocratic bearing. He had been married to Trump's daughter Ivanka since 2009. Because he was sitting closest to the president, Jared started writing down what Trump was saying, taking dictation. Finish the letter and get it to me so I can sign it, Trump ordered him.
Jared was in the process of turning the president.
And that's the forward of fear. How did we get here? And it's even more dangerous than that. Just listen to this is chapter one. I'm only going to give it 3 minutes, but you get the idea about Trump. This is
his
first year.
Oh, yeah, you said the last one was 3 minutes.
But this one's good. This is his first year as president. I won't say long. 3 minutes.
In August 2010, 6 years before taking over Donald Trump's winning presidential campaign, Steve Bannon, then 57 and a producer of right-wing political films, answered his phone. What are you doing tomorrow? Asked David Bossi, a longtime House Republican investigator and conservative activist who had chased Bill and Hillary Clinton scandals for almost 2 decades. Dude, Bannon replied, I'm cutting these fucking films I'm making for you. The 2010 midterm congressional elections were coming up. It was the height of the Tea Party movement, and Republicans were showing momentum. Dave, we're literally dropping 2 more films. I'm editing. I'm working 20 hours a day. At Citizens United, the conservative political action committee Bossie headed to churn out his anti-Clinton films. Can you come up with me to New York? For what? To see Donald Trump, Bossie said. What about? He's thinking of running for president, Bossie said. Of what country? Bannon asked. No, seriously, Bossie insisted. He had been meeting and working with Trump for months. Trump had asked for a meeting. I don't have time to jerk off, dude, Bannon said. Donald Trump's never running for president. Forget it. Against Obama? Forget it. I don't have time for fucking nonsense. Don't you want to meet him? No, I have no interest in meeting him. Trump had once given Bannon a 30-minute interview for his Sunday afternoon radio show called The Victory Sessions, which Bannon had run out of Los Angeles and billed as The Thinking Man's Radio Show. This guy's not serious, Bannon said. I think he is serious, Bossie said. Trump was a TV celebrity and had a famous show, The Apprentice, that was number one on NBC some weeks. There's no downside for us to go and meet with him. Bannon finally agreed to go to New York City to Trump Tower. They rode up to the 26th floor conference room. Trump greeted them warmly, and Bossie said he had a detailed presentation. It was a tutorial. The first part, he said, lays out how to run in a Republican primary and win. The second part explains how to run for President of the United States against Barack Obama. He described standard polling strategies and discussed process and issues. Bossie was a traditional, limited government conservative and had been caught by surprise by the Tea Party movement. It was an important moment in American politics, Bossie said, and Tea Party populism was sweeping the country. The little guy was getting his voice. Populism was a grassroots movement to disrupt the political status quo in favor of everyday people. I'm a business guy, Trump reminded them. I'm not a professional ladder climber in politics. If you're going to run for president, Bossie said, you have to know lots of little things and lots of big things. The little things were filing deadlines, the state rules for primaries, minutia. You have to know the policy side and how to win delegates. But first, he said, you need to understand the conservative movement. Trump nodded. You've got some problems on issues, Fossey said. I don't have any problems on issues, Trump said. What are you talking about? First off, there's never been a guy win a Republican primary that's not pro-life, Fossey said. And unfortunately, you're very pro-choice. What does that mean? You have a record of giving to the abortion guys, the pro-choice candidates. You've made statements. You've got to be pro-life, against abortion. I'm against abortion, Trump said. I'm pro-life. Well, you've got a track record. That can be fixed, Trump said. You just tell me how to fix that. I'm, what do you call it, pro-life? I'm pro-life, I'm telling you. Bannon was impressed with the showmanship, and increasingly so as Trump talked. Trump was engaged and quick. He was in great physical shape. His presence was bigger than the man and took over the room, a command presence. He had something. He was also like a guy in a bar talking to the TV, street smart from Queens. In Bannon's evaluation, Trump was Archie Bunker, but a really focused Archie Bunker. The second big thing, Fossey said, is your voting record. What do you mean, my voting record? About how often you vote. What are you talking about? Well, Fossey said, this is a Republican primary. I vote every time, Trump said confidently. I've voted every time since I was 18, 20 years old. That's actually not correct. You know there's a public record of your vote. Fossey, the congressional investigator, had a stack of records. They don't know how I vote. No, not how you vote, how often you vote. Bannon realized that Trump did not know the most rudimentary business of politics. I voted every time, Trump insisted. Actually, you've never voted in a primary except once in your entire life, Fossey said, citing the record. That's a fucking lie, Trump said. That's a total lie. Every time I get to vote, I voted. You only voted in one primary, Fossey said. It was like in 1988 or something, in the Republican primary. You're right, Trump said, pivoting 180 degrees, not missing a beat. That was for Rudy. Giuliani ran for mayor in a primary in 1989. Is that in there? Yes. I'll get over that, Trump said. Maybe none of these things matter, Fossey said, but maybe they do. If you're going to move forward, you have to be methodical. Bannon was up next. He turned to what was driving the Tea Party, which didn't like the elites. Populism was for the common man, knowing the system is rigged. It was against crony capitalism and insider deals, which were bleeding the workers. I love that. That's what I am, Trump said. A popularist. He mangled the word. No, Bannon said. It's populist. Yeah, Trump insisted. A popularist. Bannon gave up. At first, he thought Trump did not understand the word, but perhaps Trump meant it in his own way, being popular with the people. Bannon knew popularist was an earlier British form of the word populist for the non-intellectual general public. An hour into the meeting, Fossey said, we have another big issue. What's that? Trump asked, seeming a little more wary. Well, he said, 80% of the donations that you've given have been to Democrats. To Bossie, that was Trump's biggest political liability, though he didn't say so. That's bullshit. There's public records, Bossie said. There's records of that? Trump said in utter astonishment. Every donation you've ever given. Public disclosure of all political giving was standard. I'm always even, Trump said. He divided his donations to candidates from both parties, he said. You actually give quite a bit, but it's 80% Democratic. Chicago, Atlantic City. I've got to do that, Trump said. All these fucking Democrats run all the cities. You've got to build hotels. You've got to grease them. Those are people who came to me. Listen, Bannon said. Here's what Dave's trying to say. Running as a Tea Party guy, the problem is that's what they are complaining about, that it's guys like you that have inside deals. I'll get over that, Trump said. It's all rigged. It's a rigged system. These guys have been shaking me down for years. I don't want to give. They all walk in. If you don't write a check. There was a poll in Queens, Trump said. An old guy with a baseball bat.
You go in there, and you've got to give him something, normally in cash. If you don't give him anything, nothing gets done. Nothing gets built. But if you take it in there and you leave him an envelope, it happens.
Just went out.
That's just the way it is. But I can fix that. Fossey said he had a roadmap. It's the conservative movement. Tea Party comes and goes. Populism comes and goes. The conservative movement has been a bedrock since Goldwater. Second, he said, I would recommend you run as if you were running for governor in three states, Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. They were the first three caucus or primary states. Run and sound local, like you want to be their governor. A lot of candidates made the huge mistake of trying to run in 27 states. Run three governor's races, and you'll have a really good shot. Focus on three. Do well in three, and the others will come. I can be the nominee, Trump said. I can beat these guys. I don't care who they are. I got this. I can take care of these other things. Each position could be revisited, renegotiated. I'm pro-life, Trump said. I'm going to start. Here's what you're going to need to do, Fossey said. You're going to need to write between $250,000 and $500,000 worth of individual checks to congressmen and senators. They'll all come up here. Look them in the eye, shake their hand. You're going to give them a check because we need some markers. You've got to do one-on-ones so these guys know, because later on, that'll be at least an entry point that you're building relationships. Fossey continued, saying this check is for you for $2,400, the maximum amount. It's got to be individual checks, hard money, to their campaign so they know it's coming from you personally. Republicans now know that you're going to be serious about this. All the money, Fossey said, was central to the art of presidential politics. Later, that's going to pay huge dividends. Give to Republican candidates in a handful of battleground states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Florida. In addition, Fossey said, you're going to have to do a policy book. You ought to do a book about what you think about America and these policies. Bannon gave an extended brief on China and its successful efforts to take jobs and money from the United States. He was obsessed with the threat. What do you think? Fossey later asked Bannon. I'm pretty impressed with the guy, Bannon said. As for running for president, zero chance. First off, those two action items. The fucker will not write one check. He's not a guy who writes checks. He signs the back of checks when they come in as payments to him. It was good you said that because he'll never write a check. What about the policy book? He'll never do a policy book. Give me a fucking break. First off, nobody will buy it. It was a waste of time, except for the fact that it was insanely entertaining. Fossey said he was trying to prepare Trump if he ever did decide to run. Trump had a unique asset. He was totally removed from the political process. As they walked on, Fossey found himself going through a mental exercise, one that 6 years later most Americans would go through. He'll never run. He'll never file. He'll never announce. He'll never file his financial disclosure statement, right? He'll never do any of those things. He'll never win. You think he's going to run? Fossey finally asked Bannon. Not a chance. Zero chance, Bannon repeated. Less than zero. Look at the fucking life he's got, dude. Come on. He's not going to do this. Get his face ripped off.
There you go.
Chapter two.
That was chapter one. How did we get here? It goes in a little further. Okay, we got some more minutes left, and here we go. It's time for Supernatural Powers with Pat Oberlin.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, I'm going to tell a ghost story.
After
you tell
torturing
me
all that time?
I know. I tortured myself, you know. They have this new thing now coming up in Hollywood called Halloween. They call it creepy pasta stories. That's what they are. You'll be hearing a lot about them.
Pasta and tell stories.
Yeah. This one's about the devil. And Pat, you could just tell me if it's good or bad. You know, people always writing books. You know what I mean? And about the devil. In the desert, the voices of God and the devil are scarcely distinguishable. Mm-hmm. Here we go. You can't tell the difference if it's God or the devil talking to you. I have that problem. I have to do a quiz. Okay, you call yourself God? Yes, I do. All right. What was God's children's name? Well, let me guess. Marvin? Nope. Leroy? No, you're the devil. Okay, you got me again, Brian. I have to give a demo test. You got me again, Brian. I am the devil. What do you want, devil? I want you to do devilish things. Well, I'm not a devilish kind of guy. I'm more of a God guy. Well, why don't you just listen to me, Brian? All right, what do you have to say, devil? Well, you see that girl over there? Oh, yeah, she's hot, huh? Oh, yeah, she is. Well, why don't you go over there and whisper things in her ear, and she'll take off her top. I go, really, devil? Yes, she will. Well, I don't know if I have that power. Trust me, Brian. Go there. Okay. Whisper something
this
here.
This is your pastor
Hello.
Story?
Yeah. I'm just trying to tell you the difference between the devil and God. And you go, hello, lady. Hello. My name is Brian. Hello. The devil asked me to take off your top. Okay. Thank you. Well, devil, it worked. I told you, Brian. And you could have more. I could have more. And then there's a little angel. We'll call her little angel Laverne on my shoulder. No, Brian, you don't want to do that. What? Who's she? Oh, that's Laverne. The devil knows Laverne? Yeah, she's a spiritual person. She talks to everybody, and we get to gossip. All right, let's see what Laverne has to say. Brian, you're a nice person. Who, me? Yes, you don't know it yet, but you are. Okay. And you don't want to take this girl's top off. What do you mean I don't? No, that's the devil telling you to do this. I kind of like him. No, you want to respect women. I do. You want to respect them and be a gentleman. But when am I going to get late? Never. All right, you know, I'm going to go talk to this guy. Thank you, Laverne. Close story. Chapter 1, The Saloon. Laying in a thoroughfare outside the saloon was a pile of 20 smoldering bodies stacked on top of each other like logs. It's like a party.
Where are you going with this one?
It's a devil story. We're getting right to you.
Oh.
You're the devil keeper. You're going to say, you know what? That sucks as a devil story. It's a Halloween story. Here we go. The gang of bandits that had just rode into the twilight town. They trotted silently past the aftermath of the funeral. And no man had any words to say beyond smirks. The charred bodies laying in the dust before them twinkled. And the embers, or ombers, or who gives a fuck burst.
Embers.
Rolls up from the... Yeah, you know what? Listen, you.
Yes, sir.
It's my story. You can't edit the devil's story. Can you imagine... You would drive the devil... Can you imagine you correcting the devil? I am Satan, and I go forth. Well, you know, you can't really go forth. You got to... You know, we changed our dialect.
Well, I think
you gotta
I
go.
Did once.
You edit
you
Satan?
You think you're going to win. Damn
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's what you... Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess you did. You went up against him. Yeah, look at you. Your legend stays fresh in hell. Well, there's Pat, who took down Luther. Well,
yeah,
going back to the story.
He threw me out of heaven, so, you know.
Yeah, well, he did. And you guess what? You fell to earth and you became my psychic. Yay! Okay. Now, we go a little further. The story's almost over. So, bodies laying in the dust before them. Okay. And it says here, Black Oaks was supposed to be their next target for a great robbery. But instead, it was empty skeleton of a town with only a handful of lowly residents standing alone on the various decks of the balconies, observing them quietly. A few oil lamps glowed in the darkness in the windows and on the perimeter of the town, a pack of sickly dogs yapped and barked at each other. All right, I'm getting bored of this ghost story. Well, anyway,
you reading
let's get to the...
You're not
yes,
making
I am
it
reading.
Up?
No, I'm reading it. And now
oh
we
my.
Go to... Now we go to... See, I like the characters and how they sound. So now we go to the characters. So you're going to have to grade the characters. And they start talking like this. We got to make some money, Moss. It's supposed to be a train robbery, demons and devils and everything. So we're going into this theory. We got to make some money, Moss. I mean, them federales are on our heels. We need to go north and quick, Luke announced, breaking the heavy quiet. Here you go, and here's the dialogue. You think I don't know that, Moss said. So what are we going to do? We just need money. But from where? Just give me a goddamn minute. That's me playing all the voices of the robbery victims. Thank you, or the robbery guys. I'm taking my bow. Right, thank you. Ellie lifted his head. Oh, I'm sorry, not Ellie. I'm thinking of transgender Western. It's Eli. Sorry. yeah, I will read your audio book. Just call me. Eli lifted his head and looked around at all the other patrons in the bar. He analyzed each and every one of them. He evaluated their perceived wealth. As he gazed, he saw in the corner of the room something his stare fell upon, a strangely shaped man huddled alone in the table. A man everyone had somehow not noticed. Eli stared at him, says, oh, is this becoming a gay Western? Yum, yum, yummy. No, no, no. Let's go back. Let's go back. Eli stared at him some more and noticed the man's hands. When he's caught a glimpse of that side, his eyes glowed slightly. Look at his hands. Big hands, big, you know what? Yummy. Okay, this story took a weird turn. That's your horror story for today. Now we go to Pat. Pat, what do you think of that story? Is it a ghost, is a scary, scary story?
No, I think I... it might be the way you told it, honey.
It might be. He turned to the man with the big hand. Yummy! Yeah, I guess that's what
he
told it.
So you wanted a reading, eh?
Yeah, give me a reading. Here we go. We get the reading. Hold on, let me set the reading. Hold on, let me get the mood. Please explain how the readings go, Pat.
What do you mean?
Well, when you do a reading, is it the future, the past, or what's happening to you now, or could happen to you when somebody gets read?
What's happening to you now, and the most likely outcomes because of your state of mind.
Ooh. Okay, now this is why the readings are good. And now we're going to get into, you got a puppy? You got a puppy? I heard a puppy.
No, right, no puppy.
Let's start the reading. Hold on, let's get in the mood. Here we go. I'll introduce your reading. Hello, friends. I am your neighborhood entity. Welcome. Welcome all. Some of your souls are here. You want to say hello to Grandpa, Grandma? Oh, never mind that. Pat Oberlin is going to give me a reading. It's about my state of mind.
Okay,
where
I'm ready.
Right now. She's ready for my reading. I got to go now, friends. I will see you in hell. Bye-bye. It's Mr. Rogers
okay,
in hell.
Okay, there is
all right,
a
Pat.
Big project. Big project. Something you're working on for money.
Yes.
There's going to be a bump in the road, but it's only going to look bad. It's not going to be bad. It's just going to seem like it.
Ooh.
You are going to have security.
Uh-huh.
Defend your happiness. Really
uh-huh.
defend your happiness.
I will.
It's more important than money.
Yes.
There is success coming for you through this project. Just have a little patience because the timing is not quite here yet.
Right.
I'd say another month and a half, 2 months.
Okay. I am working on something that you're right about, that you're spot on about that. Go ahead.
You're above the problem about worries. Just be careful you don't get into overindulgence too much. Don't overindulge in spending or, drugs or any such thing.
I don't overspend on drugs. I make sure I have a budget.
Okay. Well,
I budget my drugs into my groceries bill.
So it does show financial independence.
Yeah, that means that I have no money. That's a new word for me. I have no money.
Security.
You're financially independent. I have no money. I have no friends and no money. I'm independent of all of it. But yes, thank you, Pat.
It's a really good reading. The outcome is very good.
Okay.
Just watch your happiness.
You know, outcome is not a problem. It's the income that does. Think about it.
Yeah.
Thank you. I like it. I like to read. Now, can I ask you a question on my reading?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a question. Now, how's my health in your reading? Does it say anything about my health in there?
I'd have to ask a health reading.
Okay. I will hold, and we'll put on the hold music while Pat gets it. Here's the hold music. Hold, please. We're holding this whole psychic music hold.
What is that, the tubular bells?
Yes. And then that's when the operator goes, please hold, we'll be right with you.
You've lost my train of thought.
Uh-oh.
What was I asking again?
My health.
Oh, okay, I did it, but then I forgot which layout I was doing.
Well, I'll be very quiet because I don't want to let you use your train of thought. We're talking about my health. Hold music. Hold, please.
Okay. Be careful with your back, Brian.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Be careful with your back, and you might have some problems with nerve endings or circulation.
Yes. I threw out my back 3 days ago. You're absolutely right. I threw it out.
Okay. Well, you're going to have some circulation problems from that, possibly.
Right.
Or from something else. But it could be the numbness that you've been experiencing.
It could be. I even got numb nuts.
I didn't say numb nuts. I said numbness.
Sorry. All right. Okay. My mistake. Yes, I do have numbness.
Yes, well, that would be under that heading.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for it. I want to thank you for that reading, and I think it's a great reading. So what I got out of it is that be patient on the project that I'm working on. It will come.
Yes, it is. It is almost here.
Yes. Yes. I will be patient on that. And the numbness, you did say that. Is my numbness ever going to go away? Because I had this numbness for a while. I mean, back problems are back problems.
Do you want the honest to God truth?
No, I want you to lie to me and make me very happy. Yes.
Well,
tell me
the
truth.
The numbness is probably going to be there for a while.
Yikes. I curse you, you evil psych reader.
Which, yeah.
I curse you. I want to ask one more question.
What's that?
About my love life. How's my love life doing?
It's fine, Brian. Just stop aggravating her.
Well, okay, I want to ask a more evasive question. It's not evasive. It's right direct. Does my penis satisfy my lover? Or is it just a fake orgasm to make me proud of myself?
Maybe the question is more you need to try new things.
Like actually put it inside of her?
Yeah, that would help.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I didn't know that unless I went to my side.
Certainly help me.
It would hurt. Yeah, good. Instead of sitting on the bed going, look at me, isn't this wonderful? Yeah, you got to actually do that. Thank you, Pat. Thank you very much. And now, I'm going to... In this show, if you know that, we love and we respect Laverne. Her real name is Laverne. And I could feel Laverne sometimes when she listens to the show. I could feel the powerfulness that she has. She's a very spiritual person, very nice person, very spiritual, loving person. Doesn't have one thing to say bad about anybody except me. Lovely person.
Anything bad about you.
That's because she puts it on her it'll be in silence. She loves me to death, but she doesn't always love me. There's been times where I annoy her. There's been times when I bother her. There's been times where I don't know him, especially around relatives. Well, anyway, I usually read a card of hers, and I'm going to challenge. It says here, this is something different. It says pick a card. I'm going to pick a card. And I picked, what I did was I picked a card, and it was this entity. Her name is Jocelyn. That's who she is. She's your spiritual guide. Joseph Lynn. Anyway, it's her. And
it is, eh?
It says here, which is very crazy, I got to pick another card. And it's an angel. Then I got to pick another card. These are three cards. I picked the angels. It says, what is your... okay, wait a minute. I had to put in. What is her gender? She's a woman. Next. And it says... I don't even know what the hell this site is. I thought it was going to work, but this bed is not working. What is your birthday? I don't know her birth date. She would kill me if I even said it. So that one's shitty. The bit didn't work. So what we do when something doesn't work, we
problem there, Brian.
I know, this is live radio. This is where I start tap dancing. Look at me. Took lessons. But I do want to read her. I got to find my deck. Here we go. This is my deck. Okay, and this is my deck. And it's time, we call this, it's time to read Laverne. That's the segment. It's time to read Laverne. That's right. That is right. Well,
I was supposed to be making coffee.
How come you didn't do it?
Because I got distracted. It was probably you, Brian.
You know what?
What a piece of ass.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, sometimes, the reason I play it, because sometimes I'll talk to people on Facebook as they talk to me and they call me a piece of ass, and I'm a great piece of ass. And I am the spokesperson of piece of asses. And it's not a bad thing when a guy thinks you're a piece of ass, because that's a good thing. Most guys don't want no ass that is not a piece of ass. They don't want the whole ass. They just want a piece of it. There's people who want the whole ass. Those are greedy bastards. Sometimes you want to be a gentleman and you just want a piece of it. And it's okay to have a piece of ass. Why am I talking about pieces of asses? I have not a clue. I am stalling. That's what I'm doing.
Because you always do.
Yes. And so now we're going to read Laverne. Really quickly. Yes, Laverne, because I'm challenging. This is coming. I got this. I am the psychic hammer, and this is coming from Virginia. I got this wave in Virginia. Right now I'm thinking it's rainy in Virginia. The weather is not the best in the world. And I see Laverne. There she is, lovely as ever. And she is watching not this show, but another show she is listening to. That's fine. She is sitting there patiently right now. And she may be eating something at this point. It's too late for breakfast. I think she's having lunch. It seems like there's a sandwich going on right now and soup. And this is what the cards say.
And where?
Because
Virginia?
I think she – I just have this premonition that
Laverne
is eating.
That'd be supper time.
No, it might be. It's getting close to it, but she's either getting ready to eat or she's eating. But I think she's eating something right now. And it could be some potato chip because I'm hearing crunching sounds. It's either that or she's biting her nails, but I think it's more potato chips. And as we do this, I pulled a card. Her card is strength. I pulled the strength card. And going to the professional, Pat, tell us what strength means.
It means controlling your base urges, meaning, it depends which deck, but if you're going with the Rider White Smith decks, it's controlling your urges.
And that's what it
is. If you go with the other deck, it's lust. So
controlling your urges and it's lust. Well, this is Laverne, as the great hammer of spiritual awareness and guidance, I am your spiritual guide for the next 30 seconds. And this is how you feel about yourself. You feel that despite the challenges you have been faced with in the past, present, or the future, you will find strength and courage to succeed. Whether you are recovering from ill health, a broken marriage, or a relationship, with challenges at work, you will find that the willpower to come out on top. If you're looking to give up on bad habits such as smoking or drinking, for example, this is a good time to do it. Did you ever notice that Laverne gets good cards? I don't get good cards. She gets good cards.
Yeah.
The second one is that, I didn't see this coming. And the second card is called the Devil. Tell us what the Devil means.
Destiny, honey. Destiny.
Oh. Okay.
Usually that means you're on your path on the material level anyhow.
Wow.
It can be bondage to the material, but I don't read it that way.
Well, it means that Laverne's into bondage. That's what you is bondage material. Dust off those handcuffs and whips, my dear. The Devil. It's what you want most right now. The card suggests that what you most want at this time, you can't have. No, you can't have me. No, I'm going to flirt with you. Hello, Laverne. Oh, you can't have me. Uh-uh, you can't touch me. Uh-uh. No. The Devil's making you do it. It's not you. Here, let me throw some holy water on you and you can swim across the lake. It says this. Is what you want at this time you can't have. And like the forbidden fruit. Oh, forbidden fruit? Okay, let me be the forbidden fruit. Hi, my name is Brian. I'm a Sagittarius, and I was born in the blue moon. I like water skiing and ballet. I am the forbidden fruit. Okay, hello. I don't know if that's a forbidden fruit. I don't know if that's a forbidden fruit.
You know what a blue moon is, don't you?
Yes.
The second full moon in a month?
Yes. What does a blue moon mean?
It just means it's two full moons in a month, so the second one is the blue one.
Ah, okay.
So once in a blue moon, it happens twice in a month.
Okay. Thank you.
Like some people's lives.
Okay. It can. You're right. And we got to go back to the devil now. The devil's with Laverne right now, who is saying about forbidden fruit. This only makes it even more tempting. So it tells me that Laverne is being tempted by forbidden fruit. And the name of the fruit is called Sarge. Don't go there. Don't take a bite of Sarge. That's a forbidden fruit.
Too bad
fruit.
He didn't
it's
call
tempting.
Today. He would have had rabies.
Exactly. Exactly. Don't do it. Don't taste the Sarge fruit. Wow.
I don't know how you it's got just, away with all that Trump stuff today without him calling in.
Because it's a different time. Sarge is probably on the time. He has other shows that he's not going to miss to talk about his political beliefs. It'll give me a chance to get that, my hearing back, because that pinging in my ears is still ringing. Okay.
Yeah, he is a bit loud.
He's a bit loud. He is a bit loud. I mean, he would get kicked out of a library in a minute. It says here.
Oh, yeah.
Alternatively, you know you could go for something, Laverne, but it would be a bad choice, and you'd be doing it for all the wrong reasons. Yes, you want passion and you want gratification. Just be careful where you go looking for it. So as we go down to Laverne Road, we're challenging our Laverne. The spiritual of Laverne, the afterlife of Laverne. It says here, I pulled out another card. It's called the Star. And we go to the professional.
Yeah.
What is the star about?
Hope and faith. Hope and faith. It
yes.
can also be prayer for people that are religious.
Well, here's your fear, Laverne. Here's what you fear. Most people don't know what you fear, but I do. The cards know that you fear this. This is a spiritual fear that nobody else knows but the cards and me. And I won't tell nobody, even though I'm on the radio station. There you go. But these are your fears. You are fearful of the future, Laverne. And you're lacking in self-belief. Oh, my. You're afraid of your hopes will be dashed. Well, don't be.
You've got the wrong lady.
Yeah. There you go. This is your wish card, and it signifies a time of joy and fulfillment. Good health, my dear. Possibly after a time of illness. Oh, my. And good fortune. So you're going to be sick, but you're going to be rich. It will give you a zest of life. If you're considering a new love affair, again with the theme with the love affair, but if you're considering a new love affair after a job or career or travel, then go for it. You may also receive a gift or gifts. And if you go with Sarge, you might get an STD. That is your gift. Beware of Sarge, men bearing gifts. That's right. That's right. I want Laverne to be really happy, and I want her to find a good man. And you know what a good man is? A good man is a good man. And I got to watch out for her. I'm going to be like her bookie, like her publicist, to seek out good men for her. And card four tells us everything, and it's right on topic. It's the lover card. And here's Pat, who knows about love. She has so much love that fulfills her in her earlier days. You know what I'm talking about, Chicky Baby. Tell us about the lover card.
That's choices, honey. That's choices
yes.
between lust or love.
Yes.
You should always... It can indicate lovers, but really it is down to choices. It
well, she has
lovers anyhow.
Yeah. Lust or love. Well, sometimes lust and love go hand in hand, don't they? I know I do when I'm in the bathroom. Oh, I'm lusting after this one. I love this.
Not with me.
Ah.
I haven't had an intersection of those two things rarely ever.
Really? So you know the difference between lust and love?
Oh, sure.
Really? So what is the meaning of lust, in your opinion?
Well, I can't go into it, but, you know, it's wanting to, you know, molest
yeah,
whoever you're
thinks.
After.
Yeah. I'm a left hole guy. I'm like, if you put me in a grocery store and you go in the aisle of blessed, you see, huh, there's Brian's lotion, Brian's cream, Brian's love tapping lotion. If there was an aisle, if there's an aisle in the grocery store of lust, you would see me there. Hello, welcome to the aisle of lust. There's Stay Hard lotion. There's lubricants. There's dildos and vibrators. It's a cornucopia of adult items. You know what I mean? There you go. And if you want to go to the aisle of love, you get a greeting card. So here's what's going for you, the lovers. Laverne, there's a new love and commitment will enter your life. Even if there's a theme here, there's something about romance and love and everything. There's a new love and commitment will enter your life. Even though there's no one on the horizon, be prepared for a surprise. Throw caution to the wind and expect joyous and happy times ahead. That's what's going for you. You got two more readings, and I got the sun. Tell us what the sun has. It has two little kids with daisies covering their privates. Couldn't that be good? The sun card. Overland.
Two little kids. Which deck is that?
This is, what deck am I reading from? This is the Lotus Tarot. I'm reading the Lotus Tarot.
Okay, I don't know that one.
Ah.
I don't know that one. So usually it's a child on a white horse with the sun rising behind them with sunflowers all around.
That's what it is. And what it means is, Laverne, this is going
success.
Against you. Well, this
no,
one says
it means
it's going
success.
Against her. Well,
that's
you can't
bullshit.
Fight this. The Lotus, don't get pissed. The Lotus, you, don't piss off the Lotus. It's not good. It's good.
I can if I want to.
No. Wait till I give your reading. Okay, here we go, the sun. You may experience a few delays on your quest for success and achievement, but don't worry, you'll get there in a blaze of glory. Success may go to your head a little, so a bit of modesty wouldn't go amiss. Other than a few minor delays, look forward to a period of joy and happiness. If you're experiencing problems with conceiving a baby, the sun often heralds good news around children and a much-wanted pregnancy or both. Now, if Laverne gets pregnant, we got to throw a big party. We just got to throw a big party. That's
if
all
you get pregnant, we got to call the Bible and tell them because
no,
I think...
No, don't. What are you saying? We're going to call the Bible?
I think Laverne would rather, you know, not at her age go through something like that.
Well, maybe so, but yeah. Well, I think she's done being pregnant. She has a couple of kids. She's very happy, and I don't think she wants to be pregnant anymore. So I would
I don't think most people do.
Yeah, I don't think so. She went through that. I suggest condoms in her future. And here it is. I got the Empress card. I got the Empress. This is her last one. Well, wait a minute. The sun. You may long for a baby. Okay, the Empress. This is the last one. It's the Empress card, and it's her likely outcome. And what does the Empress card have to do, Pat?
Well, that can be pregnancy or marriage. It can also be a very solid relationship because marriage is not that common anymore. Not really. I think most people live together at this point after a couple marriages, you know.
That's right. I have 15 seconds to tell her what it is.
You only get to take a couple of times.
Okay. It says, this is a truly creative and fertile time. Expect the best if you consider having a child, creating a new job or business opportunity for starting a creative project. The Empress symbolizes abundance, joy, and happiness, and reassurance, a firm foundation of progress. There you go. Did I get it in time? I think I did it in time. Pat, I want to thank you. It's been 3 hours of joy and bliss. It's been 3 hours.
Well, thank you.
Or you can say it's been torture.
Less of the other... The other business, you know.
Well, tomorrow is Thursday, and Thursday is what kind of foods do you put out for the entities that will show up, and what kind of foods for Halloween that the real spirits will come and take it. We're going to talk about the Ouija board tomorrow. We're going to talk about Ouija.
We are, eh?
Yes.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the Ouija board, the promises, and we're going to call live on the air the Ouija makers. We'll call the stores that sell the Ouija boards. We're going to get down to the bottom of the Ouija.
You know, that was invented by psychologists, apparently, but it does use spirits, and it's not something people should play with.
Well, we're going to play with it tomorrow.
Oh,
we're playing with it.
You will.
We're going. The Ouija board going to go, you know, stop it, Brian. Stop it. I'm not answering anymore. Shut up, Ouija. Answer my question, you bastard. Leave me alone, Brian. Leave me alone. Take me back to the store. Shut up, you bitch. So we're going to play with Ouija. Some people think it's a portal to the entity world. We're going to find out. We hear all about the Ouija. And it's not Luigi, which is the Mario Brothers game. It's Ouija. With a big O, and every woman loves the big O. Oh, Ouija. And now we're going to end the segment. And tomorrow, also, we're going to hear Exodus 2, the movie that's coming out, and people are loving it. And there's an interview with Linda Blair. And we may have a treat. Linda Blair may be coming on the show, by the way. She may be a guest on the show.
Cool.
We'll try to get her on the show. Linda Blair.
That would be interesting.
It will be interesting because Linda Blair right now, she's running this retreat for lost animals, and she's an adopting pets. This is one of her things. And so, you know, she mentioned that if I could talk about my pets and how to adopt a pet and everything, I'd love to come on. Okay. We'll talk about that. I will have I would have a Korean person with me to teach you about how you can cook a dog in 10 minutes and put him on a stick as a teriyaki
substitute. Oh, you're
substitute.
Awful.
Yum, yum. Doggy. Pat, how are you feeling, kid? I know. It's been a while. How are you feeling? Are you healing well?
Well, my stitches are driving me crazy at this point, but,
yeah.
You know, that's coming out the third, so,
oh,
you
really?
Know, it hurts, Brian. It does hurt.
I know.
But
I'll
be
hurt
okay.
Is good. Yeah, you will be. It's healing. It's better than it was. You're on the mend now.
Yeah.
And,
not
a scary it may hurt
weapon.
Yeah. 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 John's looking at you kind of like...
I have no belly button anymore.
Really? What do you mean?
Yeah, they cut it out.
Ah! How dare they?
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't thrilled with it anyhow, so...
Well, I'm going to tell
you
what.
Maybe I'll get a tattoo of a button put there.
Hey, that'd be good. And tell you the truth, when they get you naked, they're not looking at your belly button. No man has ever said in history of man, you know what, I got to undress her, I want to see her belly button. No man has ever said that ever in the history of mandom.
Oh, I don't know. There's got to be somebody that's fascinated with them. I mean, just
what?
People that want to see feet, right? So.
Yeah, I guess you're right. There had to be a belly button, what do you call it? Let me see. Belly, before we leave. Now you got it in my head. Belly button fetish. Let's see if there is one. Nope. Believe it or not, you can find everything on the internet. But there's navel's the most pleasurable button. Oh, my God. There is a navel fetish, believe it or not. There's a navel fetish. Yes, a belly button fetish. In which all individuals are attracted to a human navel. In 2012, it was the second most popular fetish, such as Google. It was the second most popular fetish. It was even more of a fetish than feet, hands, or anything. The belly button was the second most popular fetish.
Oh, my God. I'll have
Can
to
you
do
believe
an
that?
Absence of belly button picture.
Wow. It says, like, in 1970, there was a short-lived Belly Button magazine of which only two issues were recovered by the Kinsey Institute, featured descriptions of penetrative naval intercourse and images of sexual acts directed at the navel. Erotica. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Belly button fetish. See what you learn on the Brian Hammer Jackson show? People like to fuck your belly button. Hey, I want to fuck your belly button. It's okay. It's safe sex. Well, what about my pussy? No, 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 no. Belly button. Yeah. That's it. It's a portal of you getting substance when you're in the womb. Yes, I want to feed it. There you go. The belly button. Sexy, sexy, sexy. Thank you, beautiful Pat. Pat, please tell everybody, we're still live in some of the other portals, about your website. I'm hoping you're getting traffic because you're mentioning it on this show, but please mention the website where you are.
SpiritualNiagara.ca. Just have to look me up in the directory.
That's right, especially when she's there wearing a dress. Just look her up. Look at that.
Wearing a dress.
Yeah.
Last time I did that, I was early 20s.
Upskirt Pat, they call her, and when she was 20. All right.
It's been 40 years since I wore a dress almost.
Well, you know what? You look very lovely in a dress. I want to thank the great Pat, the beautiful Pat, for coming in the studio. I hope I see her tomorrow. I hope I do.
We probably will.
This song is,
bye, Brian.
I hope so. Have a great night. This song is Give Me a Reason, and Pat gives me a reason to come on the show every day. I'll see you tomorrow, Pat. Thank you, sweetheart. Love you.
Bye.
See you tomorrow.
Love you,
bye, too.
Bye. Now you